Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we'll be reviewing Spiral, The Woman in the Window, Those Who Wish Me Dead, and Sound of Silence. And our topic this week is entertainment that lived up to the hype. Now let's get on with the show. I'm going to be your host today. My name is Amanda Sink. Aaron Peterson and John Davenport could not be with us. So filling in those seats, we have Brian Williams, former ho of The Hollywood Outsider and always a ho in our hearts.
Hey, Amanda, glad to be here. You know, finally we got a little room to spread our wings a little bit.
Yeah, break the rules, drop every F-bomb. Yeah.
What are they going to do, fire us?
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't get paid my $0 right. paycheck. What? And then also returning into a guest seat, we have Dr. Stan the Man.
Hey, guys. What's going on tonight? I feel like I'm coming on way on the from the end of the bench, you know, just really eager to show up and do my part. So thanks for having me.
You know, I'm just glad that we've got 67% of this podcast is filled with Southern voices. So, yay.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I love it. So much charm already.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's something. I don't know if charm's the right word, but yeah, there's something.
Look, I was trying to be nice, but if you don't want the compliments, I'll revoke it. So we're going to do our news roundup, and we are flooded with options to talk about this week. So I'm going to get through these, and then we'll talk about which ones stood out most to you guys. AT&T and Discovery announced a deal under which AT&T's Warner Media will be spun off and combined with Discovery and a new standalone media company. The deal, which is still subject to regulatory approval, will combine two treasure troves of content, including the HBO Max and Discovery Plus streaming services. So we have more streaming wars. Redbox is going to the public market again, combining with Seaport Global Acquisition Corporation, a publicly traded special purpose acquisition company. Basically, Redbox is trying to stay alive. They're going to use the capital that they raised from the transaction to pay down the debt, as well as investing in multiple business models, including film distribution, transactional video on demand, premium video on demand, ad-supported linear, and on demand. Director Barry Jenkins hired a mental health counselor to help his cast and crew navigate the challenging material of the Underground Railroad. Shout out to him. I think that's amazing. A number of showings have announced their cancellations. Blackish has been renewed for its 8th and final season on ABC. This Is Us is coming to an end with season 6. And Ellen DeGeneres is ending her daily talk show next year. She said it has nothing to do with her recent controversy. Maybe. Psych is officially a trilogy with Psych 3, This Is Gus, coming to the Peacock Network with a date unknown. First Dave Bautista and Edward Norton, and now Catherine Hahn is on board with Daniel Craig for Knives Out 2, which is shooting in Greece this summer. Netflix is going forward with an Enola Holmes sequel, and Millie Bobby Brown and Henry Cavill are both set to reprise their roles as Enola and Sherlock Holmes. SEAL Team and Clarice are being moved from CBS to Paramount Plus. Super weird how this is happening. I really don't understand the direction. Discovery Plus has greenlit a docuseries, Chasing Ghislaine, focusing on Jeffrey Epstein's former girlfriend and alleged accomplice, to debut later this year. Deadline originally reported from sources that the Dune movie will debut only in theaters, but then we got communication from the head of communications with a reversal that the film will actually still release in theaters and HBO Max the same day. And then the last piece of sad news, Charles Grodin, actor in Midnight Run and The Heartbreak Kid, has passed away of bone marrow cancer. So of all of that amazing and sad news, Brian, what are you most looking forward to talking about this week?
Oh, well, I think the AT&T Discovery deal is probably the biggest thing out of just about all of that. And one of the things that I've kind of found interesting about it is, after reading a couple of articles, was that how secretive it was. And in that it actually just basically started out with the two CEOs just talking about missing, they weren't able to play golf together. And one thing led to another. And they just, next thing you know, they start working out a deal. And they kept the necessary people involved. They even had code names like the deal. They nicknamed Columbus. They named all these things after explorers. AT&T was nicknamed Armstrong. Warner Media, Magellan, and Discovery was Drake.
Wow.
Yeah, so they it was like this top secret, you know, not espionage.
It's not that important, but right, they yeah. wanted it to be that important.
Yeah, exactly. But they wanted it. They, of course, you know, you try to keep it secret. And that's just one way of doing it. And yeah, I just thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, it's just what we've seen. We actually talked about this years ago, how everybody will have their own little streaming thing, and then mm-hmm. people will start, and then we're getting back to where we were with the cable companies, and you know, it's all over again.
It really does feel like we're just kind of going to be under the umbrella of one, you know, global corporation before too terribly long. I hate to be too cynical this early in the podcast, but yeah, that's kind of the way that it feels like. Amanda, could you repeat the rest of those topics? Because
yeah, I couldn't quite write them down fast enough.
I think the thing that intrigues me the most out of all the things that you listed, probably the continually growing cask of Knives Out. That's looking really impressive. So I'm kind of excited about that. Just everybody that they're bringing in for what should be another fun movie kind of has me pretty excited.
It honestly sounds amazing. I mean, Catherine Hahn is just such an energy. Yes.
Put her in everything.
Did you guys see her moment with Elizabeth Olsen when they accept? I mean, nobody watches the MTV Awards, which is why we didn't even care to mention it in here. But WandaVision and Catherine Hahn and Elizabeth Olsen, they had nominations and they were doing an awards acceptance. And the two of them just... I mean, I love Elizabeth Olsen. I love Scarlet Witch, the character and everything. But Catherine Hahn just has such a presence and an energy that is just unmatchable. Like, she is just so eccentric and funny and engaging. And I just want to hang out with her and drink, like, mimosas or something every day of my life.
She is fantastic. I've been a fan of hers for years. And I'm hoping that her appearance in WandaVision, you know, kind of gives her her real launching point, because she does deserve to be in pretty much everything, because she does make it all better.
Oh yeah. 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 Just, I mean, she's so versatile. That's, you know, you can see her in some of these real serious, you know, dramas. And next thing you know, she's the most filthy, lewd comedian, you know, on the planet. And it's hilarious. And she's hilarious. She's hilarious. She's a great actress. She's one of those few actors that I will watch in anything. Just absolutely. You tell me she's in it. Okay, that's all I need to know.
Well, I think it says Tom a lot. Cruise. Well, her appearances in... I think you're just trying to push buttons now.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
is. He's trying to see how red my face can get.
That's right.
But her appearances in Parks and Rec, we know, when you can go toe-to-toe and actually steal a scene from Nick Offerman and...
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty incredible, so yeah. What? Who else is in that right now? So you've got Dave Bautista, Catherine Hahn. Who else has been announced for Knives Out 2? Ed Norton,
who is,
you know, say what you will about him, he's always solid.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the background of Grease. I mean, this movie is going to be beautiful. Like, I don't know if it's just because I haven't left my house in a really long time, but I'm excited to, like, travel the world via entertainment again, because I feel like I've been missing that. Yeah.
It'll be like Mamma Mia, but better.
Hey, but good. I like Mamma Mia. I don't know why, but I love the Mamma Mia movies. Don't hate on them.
I think it would be okay if they just broke out into song and Knives Out. I think that they might be onto something there.
There you go.
I mean, it sounds like we're all on board to watch Catherine Hahn do that. So if they give her that option.
Sure. I'm game.
Well, especially if she's backed up by Dave Bautista. I imagine he has a lovely baritone.
Oh my gosh, yeah, yeah. Can you imagine? I want to hear this. I'm really happy and impressed by Barry Jenkins. I mean, I shouldn't speak for everybody here. I should just speak for myself. But he is such a talented director. And then to know as a human, he's also incredible to bring mental health counselors into help the cast and the crew, because the material that they're going through is very, I mean, it can affect people in a really dark and deep way, especially if it's the communities that their grandparents or great-grandparents were historically affected by some of this stuff. So to bring in a mental health counselor, I just think is amazing and should be done absolutely anytime something this challenging is brought up, anytime there's trauma associated. Like, actors are still people too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's if it's anything like the book, which I read, I think last year, and even though it's almost, it has a certain amount of almost magical realism to it, it's still, I mean, you talk about slavery, and every other page is devastating and heartbreaking. So I'm excited to see the show because it was such a good book, and Barry Jenkins, you know, is just such a talented filmmaker, but I imagine it would have to be hard to duplicate and put those things on screen. So it's a cool thing to have folks there helping out the actors and the production staff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Especially if you're maybe you're an actor that does more of the like, what is it, the method acting, or you mm-hmm. know, you kind of put you're putting yourself in that time and situation and place. Yeah, I mean, that could be, you might need to have some help getting back to you know, how you were before. So yeah, good props to him. That's very smart and caring.
I put it on my to watch list on Amazon, but I'm not sure when it comes out. I think it did come out this weekend, along with, you know, every other thing in the universe.
Yeah, the timing was pretty rough for everything because Castlevania released a new season and Love, Death, and Robots released, I don't think with any announcement, they released their new season, which was awesome and so much fun. And it's been busy.
Yeah, it came out May 14th, a few days ago.
One thing I'm wondering for you guys, did you hear about all of this news with the SEAL team and Clarice, the changes between CBS and their streaming service?
I didn't see all the, you know, like, all I know that was kind of the headline material, and I didn't see what all the others were shifting back and forth or whatever. But I'm personally kind of bothered by the SEAL team moving over to, you know, to the streaming, because that's like the one network show that I watch.
Literally, really? Like
the only network.
You're the one person I know that watches it other than maybe like an 85-year-old grandma.
It is still, well, I'm not far from that. But
really? Tell me what your skin routine is.
You know, it's some coconut oil.
I don't even know
whatever. Just, it's got coconut in it. It's got coconut in it.
They call that pina colada, I think.
Right. You start from the inside and work your way out. That's how it works. Lots of pina coladas. So it's science. Ask the doctor.
Lots of pina coladas.
Lots of pina coladas.
They do make the skin glow. I will say that.
I rest my case. So no, but it is the one network. I mean, I don't watch really hardly anything on network TV anymore. And that is one of the shows. Actually, the only show Survivor, it's all CBS, I guess. Survivor and Big Brother and SEAL Team. And now they're taking away SEAL Team. So, but it is a very good drama. It's one of the few shows that doesn't revolve around medicine, law, and police. You don't have another drama that doesn't involve those things. So, yeah, and I hate to see it go. So, which means I'll probably be resubscribing to Paramount at some point. Damn it!
Now, had you had it previously?
I did for a while when Twilight Zone dropped, and then I made it through about halfway through season two of Star Trek. Wasn't impressed with Twilight Zone, and yeah, so I just got rid of it.
Yeah, I recently subscribed to Paramount Plus for just a short period of time to watch The Stand, and mm-hmm. you know, looked and was like, well, no, I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm good for about 1 month.
That was kind of my thing too. It was like, okay, yeah. Well, there's not much going on here, so it's not worth the extra little bit of money.
I don't think SEAL Team 6 or Clarice is going to get me to resubscribe. So, Amanda, do you have Paramount Plus?
I do not. And the thing about this news that's just so bizarre to me, and Brian, you're going to get even more pissed off when I tell you this.
Oh, I'm used to it by now with you.
So they're finishing out the season or whatever on CBS. Then they're going to release a few episodes of the next season on CBS. And then, like, after that, then they're transitioning to the streaming service.
Oh, so yeah. Like a crack dealer.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, here's your free taste. And, you know, when you need some more, you can start paying for it.
Right. It's like the crack dealer transitioning to meth, right? So, like I'm cutting you off of the crack, but here's a little bit of meth to get you through. Just, you know, if you like it, just try it. I'm branching out. I'm rebranding. So here's a little bit of meth to kind of get you to, you know, if you like it, come back and see me.
So you heard it here first. SEAL Team is like meth.
Also, speaking of people your age, Brian, I'm really wondering about... But no, I am wondering about, because there's got to be a lot of older folks in terms of demographics that are subscribed, I shouldn't say subscribed, that are watching these cable network shows on cable network like SEAL Team, and they don't know what streaming is. So they're going to, what, lose people because they just don't know how to use the technology? And
I think that's a stereotype that's changed. I don't think that's so much the stereotype anymore. That used to be the thing, especially CBS was notorious for shows like Murder, She Wrote, you know, where it was like just
all the soap operas, exactly, Days of Our Lives.
Well, yeah. And all these shows that older people watch, Walker, Texas like Ranger, older, like 70s.
I had, look, as a child, my great grandmother made me watch every episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. And so I agree. It's old. That was traditionally older folks, right? That.
Yeah. And yeah. So I don't think it's quite that way anymore. And I don't think CBS's demographic is the octogenarians.
I think just cable perspective, though. Like, I don't know that many people who have cable except for people who don't know the alternatives or how to use the alternatives or think it's just cheaper.
No, I mean, my parents have, I don't know what brand, what service they have, but they do have cable and they also have streaming. And because they use mine. So, so they are savvy with it. It's, you know, it's just, they may not instinctively follow the news and find out what's going on.
They might think the show's just been canceled. Right, right.
They might watch it. Let's say SEAL Team, for instance, they might watch that last, because I did read that it's getting a network send off. So they will put a bow around it and call it done. But
if you want some more, just head on over to Paramount Plus. Commercial free for $9.99.
Yep. Is that how much it is? $10
for commercial free? And I'm in the period of my life where I cannot, I'm willing to pay an extra $5 have commercials.
Agreed.
But I think it's $4 or $5.99.
According to Amanda, I don't have much time left, so I don't have time for commercials.
can't waste a precious minute, Brian.
I need to be as efficient as possible with my TV viewing.
Brian says, as the orderly brings in his evening pudding.
My tapioca pudding should be arriving any second.
Oh, man. I feel like I just offended a whole demographic of people now, too.
Hey, you know what? If we've got some septuagenarians and octogenarians listen to Hollywood Outsider, more power to them. You know, I think they could probably take a joke.
That's probably true. If they've survived through all of these episodes to this point, then they can definitely take a joke. They survived Brian. Presumably, they can get here, survive this.
A good on them for being able to use Apple Podcast app, which, you know, the new update has completely ruined. So I'm struggling to download podcasts these days. So maybe I'm getting that old as well.
I don't know. I don't understand Apple functionality at all because I'm all Android and PC and all that.
Yeah, you know, we all have our faults. It's all right.
I drank the Apple Kool-Aid many years ago.
Oh, yeah. I'm a deacon in the Church of Apple, that's for sure.
Well, we want to thank our Patreon supporters. The show is independently funded, therefore all of the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to all of the content in your respective tier, like our recent Bad Movie Night for Under Siege. And if you are like John, you are wrong, because this is a good movie, and we do like the cast, all right? Now that you understand what it is, if you want to support the show, it's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Were you going to say something, Brian?
I was just thinking about Erica Eleniak in that movie. I really don't remember much else about the movie other than Tommy Lee Jones kind of being a crazy man on the bridge of the ship and Erica Eleniak being rewound.
I bet.
About a dozen times.
There was a birthday cake scene, if I'm not mistaken.
There was.
And it's been 30 years since I've seen that.
We can all agree, though, those were not real. This is an argument. I feel like I'm giving away Patreon exclusives. Those were not real. Some seem to think that they are real. I'm like, that's Let's ask the doctor. Is that what anatomy looks like naturally?
Again, it's been a long... I was a preteen adolescent.
You remember, Stan.
it probably came out in the late 80s, early 90s. So the odds are if they were on display, they were not real. So I'll go with that one.
Yeah, good choice.
They're too symmetrical. I'll put it that way.
Exactly. Everything is perfectly aligned.
They don't respond to gravity. Bullets ricochet.
Okay, let's talk about our spoiler-free reviews. We are going to talk about Spiral first. This is a review between Aaron and I, who couldn't be here, but he is the man who keeps all the glue together. This is a terrible analogy.
He keeps all the gluten? Is that what he
probably does. He does, honestly. He keeps
gluten's
it all
bad.
Together.
He keeps it all the gluten in the closet.
Calories of gluten.
Hey, I am here, but I am not here, but I am here. So do you want to play a game? Let's play a game. Do you want to play a game?
You're such a dork.
All right. We're talking about Spiral, Amanda's most anticipated movie of the year, I believe, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I was really excited about it.
You should probably retract a little bit of that. All right, so working in the shadow of his father, an esteemed police veteran, who's played by Samuel L. Jackson, brash detective Ezekiel Zeke Banks, played by Chris Rock, and his rookie partner, Max Minella, take charge of a grisly investigation into murders that are eerily reminiscent of the city's gruesome past. Unwittingly entrapped in a deepening mystery, Zeke finds himself at the center of the killer's morbid game. This is a story idea that came from Chris Rock, and it was directed by Darren Lynn Bousman, who we've had on this podcast before. Find the interview. You can find the interview. It's a great interview. And this is like a reinvention of the Saw franchise. This is a different take of the Saw franchise. And eventually, you get an understanding of what they're going for, but it is kind of hard to get to that point. I will say it's essentially looking at kind of Dirty Cops, right?
I think that's
fair to say without really spoiling anything. Now, Amanda, as the most anticipated movie of the year for you, did it live up to those expectations?
No, I was still...
Or did you set those expectations maybe a little unfairly?
Well, I mean, for sure they were set unfairly, but I also... So I lessened a little bit of my hype before I actually went into the movie because I had seen mixed reviews, so it kind of... It brought me down to, like, it grounded me a little bit. So I wasn't going into it like, this is going to be an awesome movie. And I wasn't 100% convinced it was going to be an awesome movie. I just wanted to be entertained. That's what I wanted. And I trust Darren Lynn Bousman. And I think this was still a good movie. I enjoyed it. I enjoy the subtle commentary. It's subtle, but it's not subtle. Like, it's in your face, but it's not in your face. You know what
it's
I mean?
As subtle as one of these traps. I mean, I would say. And I should point out, Darren Lynn Bousman didn't direct the first Saw, but he did do Saw 2, 3, and 4. Those are pretty much the most successful of the franchise. So that's a big deal to get him back to do this because he had kind of left Saw in the wind. You know, he wanted to move on. So there you go. Now, I didn't have the high expectations. I just expected something different. I had concerns. My concerns were legitimate. You know, I'll talk about one of them when we get there. But primarily, as an overall film, I thought that it does recapture some of that Saw magic, you know, where you're invested in traps to kind of let people determine their own fate. And I like that because some of the later Saw movies, they forgot to include the option to get out of said trap, which really infuriated me. Because if you're going to make a Saw movie, the traps have to be, sure, it's grisly and it's gory, but you have to have an out. So that was the trick. You had to have, you know,
you had to
choose
have a
your
choice.
Morality.
Yeah, yep. you had to make a choice.
And some of them were near impossible in the later films. And here, you could make a choice. It's going to end up bad for you no matter what, but...
Yeah, I mean, no choice is going to be great, but I think the idea is that you made bad choices, and that's what got you here. And I've always enjoyed that commentary that the films have provided, especially the first one, where it was, what are these people doing here? What did they do wrong? Why, you know, what makes this person think that they deserve to have this as their punishment? And I know the traps were certainly an important piece to it, but they weren't as, I don't know, they weren't so as creative in the first one. They got creative after the first one. Like the initial one was, it was the story that kind of gave you a little bit of a twist. And it was like, holy crap, how are they going to get out of this? Can they get out of this? What are they going to do? What are their choices? You were still very invested in the characters. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this film, this spiral in the Book of Saw, was trying to do that again, because it wasn't all about the traps. It was like, whoa, this is crazy. This is horrible. And they definitely make you wince, but it doesn't attract. That's not what it's all about. It's also about the people and their choices and teaching them a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So
now every Saw movie has a little bit of a twist to some degree. This is honestly probably the most predictable of all of them. I figured it out like 10 minutes into the movie, and I literally called the entirety of how it ended. And I actually didn't detract. I'm a big fan of, if you've got a twist and it only works the first time, it wasn't a very good twist. I'm a big fan of that. Like, I just, whenever somebody says, well, it's a great twist, but once you know it, the movie's kind of, well, then the movie was to begin with, because the twist has to work whether it's a surprise or not. It just has to work. And I think overall, the twist actually works. It's just kind of predictable, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, they set you up. I don't think that they, it's hard to discern if it was intentional or not. I feel like Darren has done a good job in doing twists before. Like, we're especially on first when name you think basis, about.
Huh? Oh, Darren. Yeah. Hey, what's up, guy?
Yeah, we're BFFs. But when you think about the second one, and it turns out that it was Amanda as a copycat, it wasn't the original Jigsaw, and she was in there with them. And that's what happened. It's second or third. I'm pretty sure it's the second. But that was a good twist. So I know that he is capable of providing that to the audience. So I'm leaning towards it was intentional, that it wasn't supposed to be anything that shook you to your core in terms of surprise. I think there were a couple of moments where you were like, whoa, wasn't expecting that. But in terms of the main story, it was very predictable, but I was fine with it. I still liked the story.
Was too. And the very, like, the final aspect of the film was kind of a surprise how that worked out. So that was kind of cool. So I'm just talking about like a one component, which you can't go into because we don't want to spoil the film for anybody that hasn't seen it. Mm-hmm. But we can go into the one question that everyone has. It's the biggest question, because this is kind of a cool component. Chris Rock really felt passionate about this, that he wanted to get involved in Saw. For whatever reason, he loves the films and he wanted to be part of it. And he really kind of is trying to stretch himself. You know, he did that with the recent Fargo season, which he got rave reviews for. And here he's playing kind of a cop with grit and some serious daddy issues. And his dad is played by Samuel L. Jackson. Now, I think you can assume Samuel L. Jackson Samuel L. Jackson, as he is in every film, and he delivers like he always delivers. But there's been a lot of questions about, can Chris Rock deliver in a role like this? Because it's kind of against type in many aspects, you know, of his career. He's a comedian first and foremost, and that's what he is really excelled at. So here, it's a very dramatic, kind of a rough, burnt-out cop. I mean, he turned in a dirty cop many years earlier. He's still suffering the consequences with his partners. So he's got some edge to him. Still a little Chris Rock, but also a lot of character edge to him, minus one really lame New Jack City joke, but I still laughed outside of that, because he was in New Jack City, in case you didn't know. Outside of that, what did you think of Chris Rock? Did he deliver for you?
Okay, I did not expect him to exceed everyone's expectations and make an Oscar-worthy performance. I don't know where some of these people are coming from where they're like, this was terrible. Chris Rock was not meant for any sort of acting. I'm like, he did all right. He did fine. He was enjoyable. No, he's not winning an Oscar. It's not any groundbreaking performance, but I didn't go into this expecting that. I went into it to be entertained. Does he come off as a good like beaten up sort of cop, like you mentioned, where he's rough around the edges, for sure. Do I buy that he's invested in what's happening in this story? Yes, I do. I know there's moments where his dramatic performance is a little weak.
It's the intensity moments where he's trying to look intense into the camera. Those are the only ones where I had an issue. And I've heard wildly different. I've heard he was fantastic, knocked out of the park. And I've heard that he was not good. And I'm just like, I don't think it's either one. I agree with you. It's not either one. It's right. You know, he did fine. He did what I have seen so many worse performances. I feel like he's being judged unfairly because he's Chris Rock.
Absolutely. 100%. And that's really what it comes down to. Would you really be this critical of a performance by an actor if it wasn't somebody going out of their typecast? You know, and I don't think that that would be the case. I think if this were anyone else, or especially comedians, they have such a hard time getting into anything other than comedy. Like comedic actors, they're cemented into that being where they belong, according to audiences and societal standards. Even critics, they expect them to like stay in their little bubble. And so whenever they even make an attempt to branch out, they're automatically like, it's a joke. They think it's an actual joke. And it's, you have to actually consider, stand-up comedians have levels of acting that they have built into them, especially to be able to react on their toes and to use their body and their face in a way that engages with people. It's similar. It's just a different type. And so I think Chris Rock did a good job with what he was given. I didn't expect anything that was going to blow me away. I didn't get anything that blew me away. But it also was not something where it was so noticeable it hurt the film.
Yeah, I don't think anything hindered the film. The only thing that I had issue with was when he did that dramatic, intense smolder into the camera. And I'm like, I don't know why, but it came off more pouty.
Almost I didn't get that, though.
From Zoolander a little bit. I'm just like, what's going on? But that also could be, and I'm trying to be fair, Chris Rock is probably my favorite comedian. You know, he topped Chappelle for me. I just love Chris Rock. He just really speaks to, that's alive. I mean, George Carlin's up, I mean, Robin Williams, there's other comedians I'm saying. My favorite living comedian is probably Chris Rock. He just makes me laugh because he's not afraid to go for just angry shit. And I like that. And it's here too. Lots of angry shit.
He's
different, but it's a character.
Yeah.
And I think he delivers, you know, I mean, it didn't blow, like you said, didn't blow my socks off. I wasn't like, man, he should get some kind of Meryl Streep co-starring role now. Like put him in that. I didn't get that, but it's a Saw movie, man. He delivered. It's a Saw movie.
Do you know how many horrible performances, I shouldn't say horrible, but really not great performances I've seen in the Saw franchise? That is the least of my concerns. And he far surpasses many of those performances. So I really think it's just unfair judgment to somebody who went outside of their realm.
I admire him for taking a chance. Cause that's
And
that's really, it was kind of cool to see Samuel L. Jackson and Chris Rock in a freaking Saw movie.
Yeah.
You just didn't expect that. That was pretty cool. 100%. And yes, Sam Jackson gets to play with a trap. That's all I'm going to say. He gets to play with one. I'm not saying if that's good or bad, but it's worth it just for that, I would say. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of traps, okay, last question. Were the traps worthy of the Saw franchise? Because this is very much a reinvention of Saw. It's basically saying that Saw can be a little, can have some traps, but also be a different kind of movie, like you talked about earlier. But the traps still matter. So were you just like, damn? Or were you just, okay, those were cool. You know, where were you with the traps?
So, first of all, I missed the first one because I was a few minutes late to the movie.
Ooh. I will tell you this, because shame on you, by the way.
I was doing a little interview thing.
Yeah, you're, 2 minutes late, I think you said? You were like 2 minutes late?
I was a little bit later than that, but.
Okay, whatever it was. You missed the first one.
I came in right when the credits, the opening credits were like, Spiral. And I was like, are you serious? I just missed someone dying. That's why I'm here.
Well, it felt like a nice nod to COVID because the guy doesn't have any taste or smell, I think, after that. But anyway, what did you think overall with the traps?
You know,
there
were a couple moments that it really actually shook me, where I was like, ooh, ooh. And I want to talk about, like, which one I'm thinking of when I think of this, but I can't, and I don't want to ruin it. But
the Freddy Krueger one. For anybody that's seen it, I will call it the Freddy Krueger one is the one that got me. And I say that because just think fingers, you know, and just that one got me.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, that's the one. It was really intense. And it was, I mean, yes, it was gory and it was bloody. And like there's, when you go to the crime scenes, similar to the original, the beginning ones of Saw, you'd go to the crime scenes and you would see the detectives trying to put things together and figure out what's happening. And they did have some really beautiful gore scenes there. So I would just tell people, if you're squeamish, Saw movies, first of all, are not for you. And this is not changing in this movie. But I do feel like
they didn't PG-13 this up.
No. Not at all. Not at all. But they'd still made inventive and creative traps. Like, I felt like these were more creative than a lot of them, and less, they were still brutal and they were still like, whoa, ow, terrible, wouldn't want that. But at the same time, it was like about the thought process that went into it that was like, I'm impressed. I wouldn't have thought of this.
Yeah, I would agree. There are actually, I feel like there's less traps in this because it's going for more of the original Saw vibe, where yeah. It's more of a thriller. And it's not so much about how can we one-up the last trap kind of thing. It's just more about building strategically a film and a foundation so they can continue this in maybe different ways or different avenues. And you'll see what we mean if you see the movie. I don't really want to explain that much more than I already have. So yeah, the traps got me. And the one I'm talking about, if you've seen the movie, just think Freddy Krueger. That's, you know what I'm talking about if you've seen it. And if you haven't seen it, that doesn't tell you anything.
It's so brutal. Yeah, it's brutal. It's
brutal. I will not get a manicure again for a while. It's just, ah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Spiral, that does that. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Spiral?
I'm going to give it $6.
Okay. I will give it $5. That's not bad, people. I know people think it is.
It's average.
Predictable. That was a big factor for me. You know,
I did really like the tone of it, though. So there was, in terms of the look of how the film was created, there were just, it was very, it wasn't too blue and dingy like some of them have been. It was, they used more of the yellow orange tones. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated that they had me invested in the characters and in the story, because then it made those moments of the traps more brutal. You know, it had more impact. It wasn't just about bodies and people. Right. It was about humans.
And suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Definitely a lot of that. But enjoy. And also, I want to say one more time, if you've never listened to it, we have an interview with Darren Lynn Bousman, who directed 3 of the Saw films, and he talks about them in that interview. Just look through your feed. You probably have to search for it because it was a few years ago. But great interview. It's definitely worth it.
Mm-hmm, and absolutely.
I'm back out of here. So I'm going to turn it back to Amanda.
All right, now we're going to talk about The Woman in the Window. Dr. Anna Fox, played by Amy Adams, is an agoraphobic child psychologist living in Manhattan who witnesses something she shouldn't while she's keeping tabs on the new family across the street. So she's a creeper. Now, my question to Stan, because you have seen this movie.
I have.
Amy Adams is kind of known, is at least becoming known for her dark portrayals. So how did she do in The Woman in the Window?
Amy Adams, you know, she's one of those performers that kind of elevates anything that she's in. Unfortunately, I just don't think that she was given a heck of a lot to work with the script for The Woman in the Window. She was good, but I think, you know, with a tighter script, or at least one that wasn't as lazy as I found it, I think she could have brought something really special to the screen. But she's playing a woman that's agoraphobic, and at one point she looks at another character and says, "I'm agoraphobic." Amy Adams doesn't have to say that. She could she could portray
that's
that
a good point.
If given, you know, it's like, Amy, you know, just you know, you're agoraphobic, and I think she could convey that without having to actually say those words.
Yeah. So when we talk about the script, what is your initial reaction from seeing this movie? I assume you went into it with no knowledge, or had you read the book?
I had not read the book. The only knowledge I had was I knew that Amy Adams and Julianne Moore were in the cast, and that's enough to put me in the seat. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. That was the only knowledge I had before I started watching it.
So when you went into this and you saw the movie play out, I've heard some complaints about pacing, but we really want to talk about the script itself and the story. Did it meet your expectations in terms of the twist that it takes place? And I don't want to talk about the twist itself, but was it predictable to you? Did you see that it just wasn't balanced? What was your thought on the script?
It was sort of a mixed bag, I think. There were moments within the script and the story and even the filmmaking that was, you know, admirable and enjoyable, but it was just really uneven. I didn't find the pacing to be a big problem. It was more the dialogue and just sort of the character interaction. It was very strange that, you know, these two characters would speak and talk in a certain way, and they seemed to have a certain type of relationship. And in the next scene, it was completely the opposite. That left me feeling sort of confused and feeling a little behind at times, but that there was a twist and then there was a turn and there was another twist and maybe another turn. And I didn't find any of them particularly well earned. Not that they just weren't well foreshadowed, I guess. When they happened, I was like, okay, you know, I kind of saw that, but I just didn't find that they were very well earned.
Well, you're definitely not alone. There's a lot of reviews that are coming out from both critics and audiences that are very mixed and some not super great. But a lot of that comes from what I'm seeing in terms of the responses are that there's a lot of people who are comparing this film and Joe Wright as the director to Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window. Now, I do see the homages that are paid tribute to Rear Window. Of course, they even have a scene from Rear Window in the movie. But do you see that as a director who's trying to replicate some of that work, or just someone who's trying to pay homage to Hitchcock?
It seemed to be more of an homage, but I mean, there's a whole subgenre of thrillers that are basically Rear Window. Was it Suburbia? That was, you know, a few years ago. And even like movies like Fright Night, or sort of like, you know, The Neighbor Next Door, something's going on. You're kind of keeping an eye on things that aren't as they seem. So I'm not going to fault it for being an homage to Rear Window, because, you know, at some point in time, everyone pays a little bit of an homage to Hitchcock. It was just surprising that Joe Wright did this, because what he did, Atonement and like Pride and Prejudice and Anna Karenina, which, you know, are these sort of period pieces and very good ones. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And this had this unevenness where certain scenes would kind of really go for it. They would have unnatural lighting and weird filters and weird cuts and effects. And then they would just disappear for 20 minutes. I'm like, well, were you trying to go for something really interesting or dreamlike or even nightmarish? And then it would kind of turn into a stage play. So it was just really, really uneven. I didn't find the homage to Hitchcock to be a problem, because as soon as someone's sitting at their window, you're like, okay, that's Rear Window, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're a classic masterpiece, everything is compared to you.
Exactly.
So if the full price of admission were $10, what are you going to give The Woman in the Window?
For all its faults, there were some good performances. I particularly liked Wyatt Russell, who, you know, as much as Aaron wants to compare him to his father, I think he's got something going on that is a little different. But I thought he was pretty good in this. Julianne Moore was great. Could have used her a little bit more, no pun intended. But I would give it $5. It wasn't time just completely wasted.
Wow. So I saw this as well, and I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than you. It could be because I had some expectations set by Aaron too about what it was going to be going into it, and I kind of just took my, I don't know, I bought into it a lot easier than I expected I would. And so I gave this one $6, but still, it's just barely above average. So Amy Adams is, I think if you remove her from this movie, does it still work as well? No, I feel like she is the centerpiece for this entire film.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But would you agree, like, Julianne Moore, like, if they put her in a couple more scenes, then the rating goes up at least a degree.
She's wonderful. How do you underutilize that talent? It's just crazy. Madness, I say. So our next one is Those Who Wish Me Dead. This one has Angelina Jolie, who's kind of been off the radar for a little bit, and John Bernthal, who does not look as sexy without blood all over him for whatever reason. A teenage murder witness finds himself pursued by twin assassins in the Montana wilderness, with a survival expert tasked with protecting him and a forest fire threatening to consume them all. Now, Stan, you also saw this. Thank goodness I did not get a chance to finish it. But Angelina Jolie, like I said, has not been doing a whole lot lately. So I kind of expected this to be, especially since it kind of, I don't want to say bombed at the box office, but it didn't perform. I'm trying to be nice and delicate. Didn't perform like it should have. So that kind of meets my expectation. Is she not performing the way she used to? She's obviously not drawing in audiences like she used to.
So I think just the essence of her in this role, she is supposed to play a fire jumper. And if you don't know from the title, it's someone that literally jumps out of planes into raging forest fires to fight forest fires. Angelina Jolie is very glamorous and weighs about 100 pounds. She does not look like somebody that fights forest fires after jumping out of a plane. So she just had that bit to overcome. And again, the script, she just wasn't given a heck of a lot to work with, in my opinion. What did you think? Did you buy her as this, sort of broken fire jumper?
Well, again, I only saw like maybe an hour of it. I'll finish it eventually, but I feel like she's still so talented. She has so much talent left in her. But again, I think it goes to the film. Like, I felt like they were forcing her character, and it just didn't feel like it was suitable for her. And I didn't buy it, I think, in the same way you didn't buy it. Like, it just doesn't work as well as I hoped it would. However, she still comes across like a total badass to me. So there's moments where I'm like, I can buy her doing some crazy stuff. And even if it's like, I don't know, I feel like she can do some of the impossible. She just comes across as that type of person.
You know, you said I'm looking forward to, was it The Eternals? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to seeing her in the Marvel Universe for that reason, because I think she would fit that universe quickly.
That I can envision her more in some sort of, oddly, some superhero, godlike, celestial, alien-ish, role than I can a fire jumper. That's just, it's kind of like, I mean, when you throw some, it's, what was it, the Star Wars movie with Woody Harrelson. To me, Woody Harrelson was poor casting. It's not a knock on Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson just conveys different something. And it's just, and being, I don't know, the alien smuggler, Han Solo type, whatever, to me, I don't want to say ruin the movie, but it took me out of it, because he just didn't fit. It was like, he was just like a piece standing out that was just didn't go with everybody else. And to me, that's kind of how I see Angelina Jolie in that role.
Yeah, she's supposed to be suffering from some PTSD and is drinking heavily. So you saw enough of that where she was doing some of that. Amanda, did you buy that aspect of her outside of just being a Montana woman?
Not really. Like, I bought the adventurous side of her because I can see her being very adventurous and, like I said, doing some more radical things. I don't necessarily buy her alcoholism and her a level of depression and the trauma that she has. There are some very small moments that are more like glimpses where you can see it on her face. But I feel like that's the extent of it, where she can get really emotional reflecting on that trauma. And then that kind of just goes away for me.
Well, outside of Angelina Jolie, did any of the other performances stand out to you?
Well, I mean, John Bernthal is still beautiful. So there's that. It's weird. Like I said, though, it's so weird seeing him play the good guy for as far as I saw, because he's playing a sheriff. And he's I don't know. It's just weird to me to not see him be the villain. And like, I'm ready for him to take out people and to just.
Where's the reason to hate him? Where's the reason to hate him? It's not, it's we're 45 minutes into this movie and I still like him. This is wrong.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Though I do want to ask you though about the story, because there's kind of at least two very different stories and they're going to intersect essentially is what's happening here. So you have the story of this kid who witnessed a murder and he's being pursued by these assassins. He happens to be in the same wilderness area that she is at and that Angelina Jolie's character is at. And so it's kind of assumingly about them trying to survive and her trying to help him and also survive the fire. I feel like there's just so many things that they're working through in an hour and 40 minutes. Did it ever come across like, can we just pick a line and go with that?
I wasn't bothered so much by these two intersecting storylines. I guess ultimately it sort of felt like a movie from like the mid-80s that, you know, I probably watched as a kid and then just forgot, you know, 5 minutes later. There was a movie that it kind of reminded me of called, I think it's Shoot to Kill with like Tom Berenger and Sidney Poitier that I really did like. And I would recommend that one over Those Who Want Me Dead. But I just found it to be a kind of standardish thriller that didn't really do a heck of a lot for me, even with everything going on. Just didn't hit the right balance.
So my last question to you is about Taylor Sheridan. He is the director of Those Who Wish Me Dead, but he was also the writer of Hell or High Water, Sicario, and he was the writer and director of Wind River. So he's really got a plethora of talent when it comes to writing things in nature. And I feel like sometimes movies get that very wrong. They either put scenes in where it's like, that's super unrealistic. That's not how this would work. That's not how this would happen. It's too far-fetched. Did that ever happen in this movie? Did it feel like Taylor Sheridan did a nice job of making it reality-based and realistic?
It did until a certain point. I think he also is like the producer for the show Yellowstone, so there's your Paramount Plus connection here.
Are you getting paid to promote this? I just want to check.
Yeah, 10 cents per mention, so be able to buy a stick of gum soon. But I think I was not impressed with like the visuals once the fire started. I hate to say that because I just wasn't impressed with that, and I honestly don't know how these massive forest fires move and travel and spread. So if it does what they say they do, then it's terrifying, but it didn't pull me in and I didn't feel like I was, you know, in there with them. So, but the landscape shots, I mean, Montana kind of sells itself. So, up until the fire began, I was there, in the outdoors with them.
Well, that's sort of a selling point, I guess, partially. So if the full price of admission were $10 for Those Who Wish Me Dead, what are you giving it?
Ooh, I don't think it had quite as much going for it as The Woman in the Window, so I'm going to give that $4.
All right, definitely not as awesome. And our last spoiler-free review is Sound of Violence. This one is coming out of 2021 South by Southwest Film Festival. It's where a young girl recovers her hearing and gains synesthetic abilities during the brutal murder of her family. Finding solace in the sounds of bodily harm as an adult, she pursues a career in music, composing her masterpiece through gruesome murders. This sounds wild. And it sounds, I remember seeing it because I wanted to see it as well. I remember seeing the still for it. It seemed like it was vividly colorful and artistic. What is the sound of violence like? And is it as brutal as it sounds?
Well, first I want to say Jasmine Savoy Brown is the lead and she plays Alexis Reeves. I loved her performance. Like I thought she was great, legitimately great. It's a weird movie, but it's right up my alley. It's basically just a slasher flick. It's a slasher flick, but it's doing it a different way. It's someone who's been traumatized in their youth. Basically, she watched her father kill her mother, and she had lost her hearing at that point, but for whatever reason regained her hearing, you know, when that happened. Mm. So later she starts having problems with her hearing, and she finds that, you know, killing people and certain sounds triggers it back. I 100% agree. It's a ridiculous concept. And there's a lot of
I kind of like the sound of it, though.
It's very ridiculous in terms of some of the murder. Some of the murder, the very last murder is just like, it's either going to win you or lose you. That's all I can say
about
it.
Like, are they being cheeky about it, or?
They're playing it serious.
Okay.
They're playing it serious. The end gets as close to cheeky as I think possible.
Okay.
And maybe a little too close to it. But Alex Noyer wrote and directed this, and you can tell he's a fan of slasher films, because what slasher movies are great about are the kills. The kills are the best part. It's really like, how outlandish are you willing to get? And there's some outlandishness going on. And I really wonder about the crime lab in this city, because I really feel like she should have left so much evidence at so many crime scenes. But regardless, I enjoyed it. And it was, and you also have Lily Simmons is in here as Marie, and she was in a show called Banshee. And it was kind of fun to see her do something different too. But Jasmine Savoy Brown, like, does a great job. I'm really, really impressed with her.
And what do you give Sound of Violence?
I give it 550. I enjoyed it. Like, don't take that, like, I'm going to be like you now. Don't take that as a negative, because it's not negative. It's just the last, like I said, the last kill will either win you or lose you, and that's where it kind of lost me. But it's still pretty kind of cool.
Do you hear that? I hate Aaron B. Peterson.
Oh, my God. Don't get that guy started.
Liked it. 550 is good.
I really did. I enjoyed the movie. Yes, I enjoyed it. I would recommend it. It's going to be one where you're going to want to watch with your friends, too.
All right, let's get into our From the Outside In topic, entertainment that lived up to the hype. So let's talk about some of those hype moments, the biggest ones we've had, what it is that gets us hyped up. Is it being with friends? Is it a movie you're just really excited for? Is it more the experience? What is it that gets you hyped up, Stan?
You know, it's definitely something that's changed over the years. And, you know, when we kind of get to our movies that lived up to the hype, I think I kind of will describe that. But the first thing I think of with hype is, you know, just like media exposure. You know, you're just bombarded with commercials and billboards and ad campaigns. But, you know, the other ways that I get hyped are, you know, I've got friends telling me that I need to see something. And also just, you know, reading criticisms and having read books that are turned into movies or shows. Those are the kind of things that really get me excited and hyped for movies in particular.
What about you, Brian? What gets you hyped up?
Yeah, I think you've, in some capacity, you've got to have a personal connection to the material. Whether it was, maybe it's a sequel that you're anticipating because you enjoyed the first one a lot. Maybe it's something that the material hasn't been done before, or at least when it has been, it's been done poorly. And from the little bit you've seen over the previous 6 months before its release, you've got some positive hope. And again, with the media blitz, that plays a lot to it as well. But for the most part, I think to take it to that next level of anticipation, there's got to be some sort of personal connection there. And again, maybe you read the book before. Maybe you've seen an earlier adaptation that was good and you enjoyed it. So you got a high hopes for this one. It's modernized. So yeah, it's just some sort of personal connection.
See, I get super sold just by word of mouth. When I hear a lot of people talking about something and they're getting excited, I may have zero idea what it's about literally until I'm watching it, and I'll still be like, what's going on? But if somebody that I trust, their opinion I trust, gets really excited about something, then it's going to lead me to getting excited about it and like, oh, I've got to watch this. I think a good example, and I'm not trying to steal this from you because I'm sure you're going to talk about it, Brian, but Game of Thrones. Like, you literally influenced the Hollywood Outsider network of people right. to watch that damn show because you are the one who is hyping it up. And, like, that's yeah. the thing that really sells me, especially if it's one person who I really trust and they get excited about something, then I'm inherently going to because I trust that person. And I mean, okay.
And this, to your point, this story's been told a dozen times already, but I literally put money up to Scott
yeah.
to get him to watch it because he was on the fence about it. I said, look, just buy season one, buy it. And if you watch all 10 episodes and still don't like it, I will reimburse you your money. No questions asked. You tell me you don't like it, I'll pay you back. And he did and still thanks me to this day.
I think you actually deserve money from HBO for like residuals or something from the influence that you've had on people watching that show.
I'll be glad to take it if they decide to agree with you.
So that being said, do you guys have like a lot of trusted friends that you will take their word on things? Or is it just, you've got the one or two people in your life?
Yeah, it's a small group. Now it's kind of like layers, like a bullseye or something, right? So you got your core group and then you've got people that, okay, I know you watch movies differently than the average person. So you've got to, but maybe our tastes aren't quite as in sync as that inner circle. So I'm more willing to listen to them than I am the people on the outer regions of that circle, that bullseye.
Yeah. I don't listen to, like, I have acquaintances that I'm friends with on Facebook. And if I see them posting something about a movie and they're like, oh, this movie was terrible or it was really awesome, I instinctually am like, I'm going to go out of my way to watch this because I just don't trust their opinion.
Right.
I just don't.
I'm almost going to like it just to just spite them.
Yeah. Yeah. But I have a few people that I trust, but I like that I have people that I have similar tastes with and people that I have very opposite tastes with. Like Aaron, I have a pretty good idea if he's going to like something, then I'm probably going to like it unless it's a Western. And I have other friends that I will like chat with about stuff because I'm like, oh, they're going to like it. Like Angela, who's been on the show before, if she likes something, I'm probably going to enjoy it too. Unless it's, something in a certain genre, then I know that that's not probably going to be my thing. John, I don't trust his opinion on anything because I'm just opposite to his. And another listener, Sean Fuller, if he likes it, I'm probably not going to like it. We just have very different tastes. And I appreciate that because then I know.
I don't have to worry about that one.
I can skip it.
He's raving about it. So, okay. If it was a toss, like if there was three movies you were debating to watch, you're like, all right, now I'm down to two.
Sometimes I'll put like a poll in the Facebook Hollywood Outsider group and I'll put a poll of like what movies to watch or what should I include in this. And then I'll look at who voted and I'm like, if you voted for that one and it's a movie I've never seen, I'm like, I don't know about that. Just because we have different tastes. It's nothing against that person. Sure. And I respect, love that they have differing tastes because then I know that's not for me.
So I don't have like, my all my best friends, everybody likes movies and television, but I kind of keep my own counsel on what I'm going to watch. So it's a rarity where someone actually comes and says, hey, this is really good. You need to watch it. And it's almost that rarity of the recommendation that kind of gets me excited. I'm like, okay, this guy, I may not trust his taste, but he knows better than to come to me with some weak sauce.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, exactly.
So do you guys get excited just by like criticisms or things that are nominated for awards or things along on that lane?
None of that influences me at all, really. Rotten Tomatoes, I could care less whatever the score is. Mm-hmm. I don't care about any of that stuff because they're not me, basically. They're looking at it from a different angle than I am. And again, one of those movies that's highly anticipated, there's a connection. There's a personal connection. And that critic who's sitting in Los Angeles or Kansas City or some podunk podcast, hey, just kidding. They're not me. or at least, you know, they don't seem to come across as the same taste or whatever. So, but again, if it's got a personal connection, again, and that personal connection could be a billion different things for each individual person, then yeah, it's that's what kind of draws that anticipation. And then maybe the critics or the reviews, that kind of helps take it from a smolder to an actual fire. It's not that you're putting the trust in that. Maybe it's kind of a confirmation bias type of thing.
I am not someone who's going to watch something with the expectation that it will be great just because it was nominated or won an award. Quite honestly,
quite often it's the opposite.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I watch most of the movies for the Academy Awards, but I'm also like, this is going to be some uppity artsy bullshit. Right. And I'll watch it, but I'm probably not going to watch some
Looney Tunes afterwards just to cleanse my palate.
Wash it out, exactly. But there are also times where I'm like, I've also never found a critic who writes about movies that I am totally aligned with. However, when it comes to awards, TV shows, I will listen more often for TV shows that get awards because those I feel like more align with audiences rather than just the critical perception.
And that's fair.
I don't know that that's always the case, but I might give you like an extra point in the box or something if you have just, oh, you know what? I should give that a chance. It's been raved about. I think Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Anyway, that show is amazing. I can't even remember the title, but it's great. But I didn't watch it. And then I kept hearing about how great it was through friends and stuff. And then it started winning all these awards. And I was like, man, I really should give that a chance. And I finally did. And I was like, this was worth it. Like I did not expect to like it at all because I thought it might be, for whatever reason, I thought it was going to be more period PC. And it's not at all. And it's just hilarious. And she's crass, and I love crass, funny women. So
it's such a great show. It's also one of those satisfying things when you do have the hype and it, for lack of a better term, you have expectations. You know, that's
right.
To me, that's what hype is. You know, I'm going in this expecting to have my hair blown back, and when that is met, man, that is a very satisfying experience. And I think I had a similar experience with Miss Maisel because you know. And I didn't know anyone that told me about it. I wasn't following anything on social media. It was just the criticism and, you know, seeing some ads here and there. And then I finally watch it. And I'm like, man, this show is great. And that's, you know, I come about things, my hype, I do listen to a handful of critics that I don't necessarily align myself with, but I've learned to trust their direction. Like, okay, you know, I should check this out. It doesn't always pay off, but, I personally have become so cynical about advertising in particular, and I don't know if it still has the same effect on me today as it did, you know, when I was a kid and you'd see the new trailer for the new movie and I'd be so excited and then inevitably, you know, it's Battlefield Earth or, you know, something along those lines. So I've become a little more wary in how hyped I get for certain television shows and movies. Do you guys find that as
you kind of see the strings, so to speak?
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, you don't leave yourself open to the psychological manipulation.
Yeah. You kind of walk in closed off, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, no, I agree. I'm very similar. I see the game, I think is what it is. And it's not just, there's a certain amount of, I guess, naivety that I wish I could kind of recapture to where I could just watch it and just go, oh yeah, you know, and it's hard because every now and then a trailer drops and I'm like, okay, I'm on board, you know, but a lot of times, yeah, I watch it with a certain cynicism, I guess it's probably about the best word.
You don't want to get your expectations or hopes up and then get crushed and disappointed. You've probably lived through that enough.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, yeah.
I'm not doing that again.
Yeah. There's a countless, I mean, you know, it's, well, you know, yeah. And then you, so many of them as well, like they show the highlights of the movie. So when you see the movie, it's not that even they even spoil the ending, which half of those, you can just, you know, the whole plot. But they take the each highlight from the movie, and there might be only three or four highlights, and you see them all in the trailer. Yeah. There's no more surprises anymore. And so that's where you really, they really pull the carpet out from underneath your feet and leave you, leave you bruised and broken.
I try not to watch too many trailers for that reason. If it's something that I'm looking forward to, I don't really know that I need to see the trailer, but if I'm so excited that I want like a glimpse of it because I'm like, I can't wait any longer, then I'll watch a little bit of it, but I'm not going to watch the second and the third and the fourth trailer because that's where I feel like it's just unnecessary. Like you're giving me, you're trying too hard, first of all, to sell me on something that I'm probably already sold on, and you're not grabbing in new individuals or demographics that you weren't achieving before. Like you have already marketed those people. They're interested in Marvel movies. You don't have to show me more of the movie. Like when you have Hulk show up in your Thor movie, I don't need to see that in the trailer because that was a cool moment that you just ruined for me.
Yep.
Now I'm getting off like I'm venting, but
well, you know, you, you bring up the Marvel movies and it kind of reminds me there's been times in my life where I have been hyped for something and there's been a lot of hype for a movie and then I'll watch something and be, you know, maybe not disappointed, but at least underwhelmed and then revisit it later. I'm like, no, this was actually really good.
Right.
But I didn't have that like overwhelming, you know, surge and happiness in the initial experience because I think I was probably let down because it was overhyped. And the Avengers was one of those circumstances that, you know, I enjoyed it. I liked it for what it was. And then I kept hearing people talk about it and reading about it. Like, hey, maybe I need to give this another chance and watched it on the second screening. And I was like, all right, this is pretty great.
Well, let's start talking about some of those that did live up to the hype for us. So we're going to give three examples. We'll go round robin. We'll go Stan, Brian, and myself. So Stan, what is your first one?
Okay, so this one, you know, just bear with me. It's a little out of left field. But like I said, I get hyped by having read books and listened to criticisms. And that really factored into my first pick, which is The Grapes of Wrath, you know, from 1940.
Oh.
So, and this is something that I just watched within the past 6 months. You know, it's a title that everybody knows and
nobody can tell you a thing about it.
Exactly. And that was me. You know, I knew there was this supposedly great book and this supposedly great movie. And I didn't read it in high school. And I think that if you don't, then, you know, you're probably not going to read these books, you know, unless you just happen to have nothing else to do. And I was a little intimidated. And I'm sometimes intimidated by movies like this. You know, it's supposedly, you know, the top 10 novels in American history, and it's in the top 20 of the AFI's movie, their top 100. So I was a little put off by, you know, venturing into the title, and then I read it at the end of last year, and like, okay, this is one of my favorite books, and it was so good. But that even set the expectations for the movie even higher, and I finally watched it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so good. It is heartbreaking and beautiful. And it's so relevant today. It's one of these movies that I was like, yeah, everybody needs to watch this. And it really, like, it far exceeded my expectations and they were already set really high. You know, I was worried that it was going to be a little bit like Homework and it was just kind of a joyful movie to watch, even if it's just completely, completely depressing. It's just really good. So that's my first pick.
Was it Henry Fonda? Henry Fonda was in it?
Yeah, Henry Fonda, directed by John Ford. I mean, it has these like epic, iconic names in Hollywood that are leading the way. And again, it just sort of built up all these expectations that I just didn't really think that there would be any chance that it could live up to, and then it did. So
book adaptations, I feel like, are the hardest to live up to, which is why I try to be notorious for not I try not to, if I hear something exciting about a new project, like a TV show or a film that's coming out, and it's being adapted from a book, a lot of people will be like, oh, I got to read the book and then watch it. I'm like 100% opposite. I'm not going to read that book until after, because I do not want to be disappointed. Had enough entertainment disappointments in my life already. I'm not going to risk it. It's just so hard. Because you're building that imagery in your head. You envision what these characters are like. You have so much more story. And then you lose it to film or television. And it's just, then yeah, you're all sad.
Right. You're seeing somebody else's interpretation of the same material.
Exactly.
And again, a lot of times that doesn't jive. But yeah. No, I hear you. I'm the same way. If it's based on a book or something like that, then I'll watch it. And if I like that, then okay, it's like I read the book to get more, you know, the more detail, the more
exactly, you
know, all that stuff, and then yeah, I'm better that way as well.
I go kind of both ways on whether to read the book or watch the show or the movie. I've kind of found that whichever version that I experience first, it's probably the one that I'm going to like the best. It's not 100% of the case, but it's often the case. Every book that I think is that doesn't live up to the movie, or every movie that I think is better than a book, I usually saw the movie first. So,
Brian, what's your first?
I'm going chronologically here, and I'm going with The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, good choice.
It's obviously. I mean, I saw Star Wars first. Obviously, liked it, but I can remember just being outside of the theater, and the line was just wrapped around. I can remember standing behind the building waiting for tickets, and you know, you'd seen commercials and you know, again, it's Empire was, I don't know, something like 5-6 years after, you know, now they're making 3 movies at the same time, basically. So they come out once a year. You had to wait 4, 5, 6 years before a sequel ever came out sometimes. So it was by that time, I mean, you know, I'm probably, I don't know, maybe 9, 10, 11 years old, and I'm just giddy for more Star Wars stuff. And yeah, and I can just remember being outside and being around the building and slowly inching forward, and that anticipation's building as you get closer and closer. And, you know, then you start getting within maybe 10 feet of the ticket counter, and you can, the people that are leaving are just, you know, you're like, you don't want to hear anything, but yet you can see it in their faces, and they're excited.
Yeah.
And you're excited, and you're smelling the popcorn, and you're like, oh my God, I'm just, you know, you're grabbing people in front of you just to like move them out of the way just so you can get the ticket. And it's just like, ah, I just can't wait to get in there and see this movie. And it lived up to it. That's the final part there is the movie actually lived up to it. So
just a great experience. Yeah, I saw it in the theaters, but I was probably, you know, 4 or 5. So I have only the vaguest notion, but
right.
I sort of wish I could remember that better, because that's such a good one.
And I don't know when the first time, honestly, I don't remember the first time I saw Star Wars. I just know, I mean, it was when it came out, I was probably 4 years old. So I doubt it was in the theater, but I'm sure at some point before Empire came out, obviously I saw it. I just, you know, of course it probably made it on TV or something at some point, and probably rented it some laser disc or something, but something crazy, but you know, but yeah. So Empire was the first one.
Man, I have to say though, I miss that being part of the movie going experience. Waiting in, nobody likes waiting in lines at all, but it was just such a, like, you're there, you're anticipating, you're like, I don't know if you guys are like me, I'm super competitive. So I'm like, I gotta get the best seat. Like, I'm gonna get here. I don't get on time or early to anything except for movies. And so I'm like, I gotta get the best seat. I wanna sit where I wanna sit, and I'm not gonna lose out. Cause there were so many times where if you didn't show up early enough, you weren't going to get a ticket. You know, and so you were like,
much less a good seat.
Yes, much less a good seat. And that was back before, you know, obviously before COVID, when you could, you know, smash people together and every single seat was filled down to the very bottom.
Yeah.
Like that was so exciting to be there.
When I would have a date and I'm waiting on her and I'm pacing back and forth, and we finally get there and we're having to sit in those first couple of rows. Oh my God, I'm so pissed for the next, you know, you're just, I'm fine. I'm fine.
And that's why you're not with that, those people.
Exactly.
That's a deal breaker.
It's so funny that you say about, you know, because standing in line for the movies, it was actually kind of fun, you know, and standing in line is almost like watching commercials for me. It's
right.
I do not tolerate it, but I remember every big movie that I stood in line for and always, you know, had a good time, had a blast, yep. You know, from 20, 30
all,
years
you're
ago.
You're all there to, for yeah. the same reason.
You're
it doesn't
all
matter
excited.
Who you are. It doesn't yeah. matter who you are, where you're from. You are excited about that damn movie. And, yeah. you know, and then, you know, if it's one of those, like back in the day where it's a long line, you start talking with somebody and, you know, they notice stuff that you didn't know. You pick up, you know, you're picking up stuff from them, vice versa. You're kind of bonding and it's this fun ride. And it's just, it's such a good experience that is you just don't get anymore. And of course, it is bad too. I mean, you're waiting. You got to get there for a 7 o'clock movie. You got to get there at like 4 o'clock. But you know, still.
Oh, I think I stood in line to see The Phantom Menace for like 4 hours or right. something ridiculous back then. And then, you know, talk about not meeting expectations or not living up to the hype. That was just kind of heartbreaking. But yeah. But all that being said, I really like buying my seats in advance as well. So.
Oh, yes. Oh, and yeah. you get to choose your seats. And right now, at least with AMC, and God, I wish this could stay forever, it blocks out the seats around you. So you're like, I don't know if you guys are like me. I'm like, I don't want you in front of me.
Yeah,
behind me.
Even before COVID, yeah, I like my space. I like yeah. my space.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a little, when that big movie, you know, and then all of a sudden somebody comes in as yeah. the trailers are starting or the commercials before the trailers start. And then that's when that person wants to sit down right next to you. And you're like, shit.
Yep. Yeah.
This is my elbow space and you will not infringe upon it. I was here first.
I remember working at the movie theater and so many times, like part of my job was just de-escalating people because they didn't want that person sitting next to them. And they're like, I was here early and now they're going to sit next to me. Or like people would have to scoot down a few seats to make space for two right next to each other. And they're like, I don't want to move my seat. And I'm like, you are children. But I do remember one of the funny things is like, especially for big, big, big movies or franchises, we would open the theater, I don't know, like 9, 10 in the morning, and we would have somebody waiting outside when we got to work, like ready to stand and wait the whole day. And you're like, Jesus Christ, man, do you have a life?
Oh. The answer is no.
Right?
But
and it's
God
just
bless them.
That one fool in the friend group who's like, man, you got to go there and get our tickets. You got to wait in line. He's like, okay, I will. And you're like, man, you need better friends. They're going to make you wait here all day by yourself.
Can you at least bring me some water? No. Just bring me tickets.
Right?
So,
right?
I don't know, dude. I got to work. But, you know, just hang out, dude. We appreciate it.
Can you get one for my girlfriend?
Yeah. And then the last minute, can you add another one or something?
Yeah.
Man. All right. So my first one, I've been a fan of the Fast and the Furious franchise. Those movies are stupid, but they're so much fun. And once we got, so like we had the expectation that these are going to be dumb fun, right? And then we get to Fast Five and everybody's like, we have basically a whole row with just our friends and family or whatever. And we're all super excited. Everybody's ready to like rev their Honda Accord out in the parking lot after the movie.
With a big coffee can on the back end.
Yes. Yes. And that movie just lived up to it so much. Like I just didn't expect it to be so fun and enjoyable and entertaining and everything was so awesome about it. And that was when we had midnight showings still. And when you dedicate, especially like for older people and you're an adult, you're no longer like a kid, and you dedicate time out of your life to stay up late, to wake up early, to go to work the next day so you can go to this damn midnight showing, like that's dedication. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't live up to it, you're going to be pissed. But when it does, you're like, that was so worth it. I don't need sleep.
They make a lot of coffee. I'll be good.
Right? Right?
I have to excuse myself, given my history of the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Wait, so. We said you had to watch those, right, before you came back on? Wasn't that the franchise?
Well, I said that I would try, and then I didn't think I would be back within a month, so I was taken by surprise.
All right, well, now you really have a homework assignment. We need you to report back.
Well, the first two are on HBO Max, so I don't have to pay for those two. So, but I really sort of want to take your advice and just jump in around 4 or 5. So I haven't decided which direction I'm going to go with them.
golly, there's things that play off later from the earlier ones. I mean, they're not big. Big things. Well,
you could start at 4 or 5 though and not have too much insight into it. Yeah. And then start with like the better ones and then go back and watch the others. Cause I feel like you have to go in because with the one expectation that it gets better.
Yeah. Cause one and two are just like, yeah, I mean, they're just basic movies, right?
And 3 is just god awful garbage.
3 is not god awful garbage. 3
you
is,
are very
is,
wrong.
You
oh,
are,
we have found the Tokyo Drift Defender.
Yes.
The only one in the entire world.
Well, hey, look at it this way. The lead in the movie is from Gadsden. So, Alabama, just so you know.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot he was an Alabamian.
There you go. And refuses to lose his southern accent. So, props
even
to
when
him.
He's in Tokyo.
Even yeah. when he's in Tokyo. Well, he's there's a you find out the reason why he's in Tokyo. It's like son of a Navy career Navy guy or something. But yeah, anyway.
Obviously.
It's not as bad. Now, it doesn't flow with the rest of the franchise very well. And they've made stuff to fit it in there, but yeah, it's a square peg in a round hole for sure.
Well, they just weren't really sure which direction that they wanted to go with the franchise.
On its own merit, it's not that bad of a movie. But yeah, but you're right. But to your point, Amanda, there was a definite lull after 3. And then when 4 came out, that was such a huge surprise. So the anticipation for 5 was just off the charts. And that's a very, very good call because that's a very good call.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Stan, what is your next one that lived up to the hype?
This one was such a good experience for me, but it's one of those movies that I've had several friends and I'm like, I love this movie. And they were like, no, that's terrible. But it is, I think it's maybe my favorite movie of the past decade, and it's Mad Max Fury Road. I absolutely love this movie. Oh, no. It's everybody's entitled to their wrong opinions, but I was so excited for this movie because, I was a big fan of the original trilogy. It was 30 years between Thunderdome and Fury Road. So, and there were always these little rumors that George Miller was going to make another one. And it always fell through. So there was that sort of inner anticipation. And then when it got greenlit and they were coming out with it, I'm like, really excited. And then they cast Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron. And I'm like, okay, this is even better. But George Miller was in his late 60s. I'm like, has he lost it? So I was really anxious. And then the trailer came out and I was beside myself. I was just a total fanboy and saw it within the first week. I had to work or something the opening night, but I was there pretty early and it just kind of melted my brain. I was so happy. I had a smile on my face a mile wide through the entire first time I saw it. And I went back like within 2 or 3 days to see it again. And it's just, it was one of the best theater experiences. I just love it. It's just this purely visual piece of cinema that I can't glow enough about. But it lived up to 30 years of hype. I mean, it was what, again, going back to Phantom Menace, what that should have been for me as an 80s kid. But I take it that you're not a fan.
Okay, so let me clarify. I'm not a fan. I think the movie is a great movie. It is beautiful. I mean, honestly, the cinematography and the style and the tone, everything about it is just magnificent. Talented cast. I just feel like they're going in a giant circle, and I didn't really understand why they were going on a giant circle, but it's a pretty journey of a circle.
So here's the story. We're going to go for a while out in the middle of the desert,
kill a bunch of people.
And then turn around and come back.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, dude.
Yes.
Here's $300 million. Go for it.
Yes, exactly.
But that is all I want or need from a Mad Max movie. I imagine it probably is a similar feeling with, you know, the fans of the Fast and Furious franchise. You know what you're going in for. Mm. It is for just adrenaline and great visuals. But for Fury Road, I think there's a lot more going on that doesn't get enough credit. Just the acting between Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron, just they say so much with little glances and little looks and minimal dialogue. And it is, you know, there's a lot of subtext and what's happening in this road that was a little unfortunately prescient. But that being said, I think it's a fun movie. I would watch it every 6 months if I could get away with it.
I may have to give it another shot because, in full disclosure, I've only seen it maybe two times for sure, at least obviously once, but I should probably give it another go now that I got through the first experience with no prior knowledge of Mad Max, like going into it. So I was like, did we really just go in a circle?
You really don't need any prior knowledge. Honestly, the original trilogy, they're pretty loosely connected, even within the first three.
Yeah, those first three, they talk about time jumps. I mean, it's like, what the shit is going on? This is crazy.
Yeah, it's just this, you know, here's the world we live in, and here's another story. But yeah, that was a, you know, exceeded expectations, exceeded the hype for me.
That's still a good pick.
Yeah, it is a good pick. Absolutely. Mine is, honestly, it's one of the, I'm even shocked that this is on my list.
Oh,
because I don't remember much like leading up to it, but probably the media blitz, a few people who saw this movie that I trusted at the time, they paid off, you know, I took their advice, went to see it. That's The Ring.
Really?
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know the last time. I don't know if I've been scared in a movie since that movie. I was scared in that movie.
Rightly so.
And it's just one of those to where like it was one of those, it was more the word of mouth stuff. And you know, I just remember hearing like for maybe that opening weekend, it was just, I just heard people saying, "Oh my God, this is," you know, of course the visuals were, you know, just seeing it on TV were spooky enough, but it was just like you hear the people that are like, "Oh yeah, you need to go see this thing." It's like, "All right, cool." Went and saw it, and that it freaked me out and put me on a binge for all kinds of like Japanese horror stuff for the next like 5 years. And that was one that lived up to my expectations, because again, I don't remember the last time before that I was actually scared in the movies, you know, and certainly since then. So
I think that's saying a lot, because I absolutely love horror movies. It's probably my favorite genre, but there are very few that I think get a lot of hype. You know,
right.
Yeah.
You know, I look forward to certain things like, well, this may be good, but you know, there's so many bad horror films.
And they make such they make such great covers and posters.
Yes,
and taglines and titles. They are amazing at the visual stuff to get you to watch it. And the movies, more often than not, are bad.
Yeah, they are. They are. No, that is.
But it's fun
sorting
through them. It's fun sorting through.
Oh, I really got. I had a great experience watching. I was a projectionist at a movie theater when that came out, and so I got to screen that the night before it was released. And you know, it was just like, okay, I got this horror film, and it was just such a fun time, and a surprise. I didn't know much about it before it came out, so it was a good surprise for me.
Same here.
That's a good pick. I think there's not many that scared me either. And that one, I wouldn't say it scared me, but it definitely freaked me out. Like it made me uneasy for sure.
Yeah.
And I think to this, I mean, I remember like doing my own replication of that in like the pool in school. So yeah, it did live up to it. And it was one of those things where it was, at least for me, it wasn't all over the place. It wasn't crazy.
Right.
It wasn't like Blair Witch, but it was like, it was the next thing that like you had to watch, like from the people in my close-knit group of people that did watch movies. And it was like, you got to watch this. You got to watch this. And so when you do, you're like, holy shit. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad I watched it. I don't know that I want to see the original because apparently it's terrifying. But yeah, this one was good.
Well, yeah. And like I said, it put me on like a binge for the next probably 5 years or even more. Where I'm just going, okay, well, there's these, again, you know, there was a number of remakes, The Ring, was it The Grudge?
The Grudge.
A few others. And so I'd watch the Japanese version. I'd watch, you know, then I'd, yeah, so I was just watching all this stuff and none of them really quite lived up. I guess you're kind of anticipating, you're wanting that fear or that feeling you got the first time you watched it. And none of them really lived up to it, but I think just going into it blind, because I really didn't know much about the story. I didn't know it was based on Japanese stuff or whatever. So, yeah, it was a surprise, but a lot of it was just built from the word of mouth and the anticipation. And it was just like, you got to go see this. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, I'm the movie guy of the bunch. You know, why are you, you know, I'm tired of falling for y'all's crap. And
who are you to tell me?
Right, right. Say, no, you got it. Okay, I'll go see it.
Well, my next one is a film that came out when I was incredibly young. I don't want to age myself too much, but so it's one that like pop culture references all the time. You can't not see it if you're a cinephile. You have to watch it. I had seen so many films from this director and loved them, but this movie kind of sat by the wayside for a little while until I was in my late teens, early 20s, and I finally watched Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
And it was just like, God damn, how did I not watch this for so many years of my life? I could have seen this when I was like 8 years old, but I didn't. And it was incredible. I did not expect it to resonate with me. Like, it didn't really resonate with me. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but I just like, I felt it. Like, I felt so connected to the movie where I was like, I am all in for this crazy madness and I love it. I fell absolutely in love with it, and I didn't expect to enjoy it that much because it seemed like it was just one of those you gotta reference it sort of things where it's like, oh, you're just referencing it because you want to sound cool or whatever. Like, that was the movie to reference to sound cool. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, I probably should have seen this sooner. Like, I get it now. I do get it.
Oh, that's so great. I'm so glad you brought that up. It was on my short list of movies that met expectations. It might be my favorite movie of all time. Just love it. I remember seeing it in the theater when it came out, and I had not even seen Reservoir Dogs, but you know, it was over, and I knew that things were different for me. But you know, having watched it in southeastern Kentucky, after when I stood up, the guy in front of me that I didn't know, I just overhear him say, "I don't get it." I was like, come on, that's the best movie ever. What don't you get? It's so good. But yeah, that one had a lot of hype because of Reservoir Dogs, and then it just kind of got all this critical praise. So it sounds like you had even seen more Tarantino before Pulp Fiction.
I was exposed to Tarantino from a younger age, and so I don't know how this one slipped past me unless I somehow watched it when I was too young to remember it, but I doubt that's the case. So when I finally got around to it, I was like, man, how have I seen all of these Tarantino movies but I just haven't seen Pulp Fiction? And it was like, I hadn't completed my first degree, but I started taking film classes. And so, of course, it was referenced. And I'm like, man, this sounds really awesome. Like, I don't know why I haven't watched it. And then I started to, like, put all the pieces together of people who are referencing it. And I felt like I had a good enough understanding of the movie without having seen it. So it's just like one of those where it's like, I know what it's about. You know, I don't need to, you know, see it right now. And then as time kind of went on, I was like, but like, I should watch that. So I did. And it just was one of those nights where I was hanging out inside and it was like a Friday or Saturday night or something. And I was like, oh, I'll just put this movie on. And I was like, wow, this is a great experience, even by myself.
So was it one of those, did you like outwardly admit that you had not seen Pulp Fiction? Because that's definitely one that if you were in film school,
yeah. You're like, ooh, I'm going to go grab a coffee real quick.
Nobody asked me, so I didn't have to say anything. Nobody asked me, but it is one of those things where it's like, you don't want to be embarrassed and like, oh yeah, I've seen all of these cult classics. I've seen all of these classics. I've seen all of these terrible B horror movies, and yet I haven't seen Pulp Fiction. So I thankfully I never had anyone ask me like, have you not seen that movie?
And it was probably assumed. If you're in a film class, you're probably, you know, you've probably, it's assumed you've seen it.
Right. Who has seen Citizen Kane but then hasn't seen Pulp Fiction? Like, it's right. Just a weird thing for
the same people
girl.
That watch CBS, apparently.
Yep. And then I found that I do an incredible Mia Wallace cosplay. So that was like my Halloween.
I remember
costume.
The pictures. Yeah, I remember the pictures from that.
I won a gift certificate for that costume. Heck yeah, I did. I even had the needle, like a
yeah,
fake
you had
needle.
The needle and the blood and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. It was that sticking awesome. Out. Yeah, it was awesome.
This is after you saw the movie, I hope.
Yes. Right,
right. See, I got this crazy idea. I'm just going to like dress up. I'm going to stab a needle in my heart. Oh, Pulp Fiction? What is that?
Yep. Stan, what's your third one?
All right, so my final pick, it probably is the movie that lived up to the hype the most. And this was, you know, probably the most traditional way that I've ever been hyped for a movie. And that was Independence Day from 96.
Yeah.
If, like, this hooked me at the Super Bowl ad because there was a 30-second commercial. And all it was is like July 2nd, they arrive. July 3rd, they attack. July 4th, Independence Day. And then it showed the White House being blown up. And I'm like, I have to see that right now. I don't care what happened. And then for the next 6 months, because that was January and it was released, I think, 4th of July weekend. And I was just like obsessed. Like I was completely obsessed for 6 months. And I was just like, okay. And I'm watching the trailers and I'm reading articles and I'm just like super stoked. And it was there opening night. And it totally lived up to the expectations. It is still a super, super fun movie. I mean, it was prime Will Smith and Goldblum being super Goldblum-y and, you know, Bill Pullman giving the best speech in any movie ever.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Oh man. That's what I would watch it every 4th of July. If I, you know, if I had a chance, I just love it. And it was one, like I would grab somebody if they had not seen it, like, no, we're going back to see this movie. Because you have to see it. And everybody's like, yeah, it's good. It's good. And I'm like, no. It's so good. But I was blown away by it. It was a fun experience. But I was like, you know, really, really, really hyped for that one. And it was all based on that 30-second trailer.
Yeah.
And I rewatched it today and it's, you know, it's fine. No. And maybe it's just because it's just the cinematography that was on YouTube wasn't great, but I'm like, oh, that was not that impressive. But well,
you watched it on YouTube?
The 30-second trailer, yeah. The Super Bowl trailer.
I mean, where else are you gonna watch it? Oh.
I thought he meant that he watched the movie today on YouTube. Yeah. I'm like, oh, you have better options, sir. Let me introduce you to streaming.
No,
Paramount Plus not teach you about this?
I was in college at a school sponsored Super Bowl party, and you know, it was in like the cafeteria and they had the big screen up and they had food and everything, and just, you know, I'm sitting there watching the movie trailers where everybody else is talking because the game's not on, and I'm like, that's for me. And I'm like, did anybody else see that? Because it was awesome.
Well, yeah, and that was, you know, and that's a great example of where the marketing can show you some of the great stuff from the movie without showing you everything from the movie, you know, where like we're talking about, like we mentioned earlier, they show you the three or four highlights and then you're not surprised throughout the rest of the movie, but they showed you like the one of the biggest eye popping pieces and you're just like, oh, okay, you've hooked me. And then but the rest of the movie is great, and there's lots of other surprises and funny moments and Time to kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
So, you know what doesn't live up to any expectations?
What?
Independence Day resurgence.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. No, that's on the list for the it other hurts. Episode.
Yeah.
Where they don't the movies that don't live up to expectations.
Yeah, that can't even survive a bad movie night. It's it's that movie is just trash. Just trash.
Oh man.
Brian, what's your last one?
Golly, this one really, it's one of those, it's the emotional or the connection. And golly, and it was mentioned earlier, and I almost cracked up laughing, but it's the Avengers, the first one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, being a grown up, reading comic books, the Avengers was one of my most, you know, collected comics. And all the individual superhero movies were good and great, you know, as far as I was concerned, you know, and to see them all together and with all the jokes, especially like between Hulk and Thor and, you know, Hulk slinging Loki around like he's just a rag doll. And it was so much more than I wanted it to be. So much more. It had the superhero. I mean, the shots that made it feel like a superhero movie. It had the great action and all that stuff, and see all these characters together and done well. That's the key. Is there's been a lot of superhero stuff done over the last, you know, 40 years or so, and really until the last 20 years if you want to count X-Men, because X-Men was, especially at the time, was done well. It's hard to watch some of those earlier ones, but anyway, for the most part, they were received well. That just lived up to everything, and I just walked out of that movie on such a high. Just the biggest grin, and just my inner kid was just, he was so satisfied, because, you know, and, you know, if you want to break it down to the minutiae stuff, yeah, maybe not the greatest story or something, but, and it's got its couple little bad points, but for the most part, it's just, it's what I always wanted as a kid. And It lived up to every bit of that anticipation.
I enjoyed watching those movies through my nephew's eyes, the Avengers films, because he would get so excited, and he had to have been probably seven or eight or something when the first one came out, maybe even younger. But I just remember getting, like, that was our thing, is we would go see those movies, and he would get so excited. I'd probably spend like $60 on concessions on shit that he would just end up throwing in the garbage because he couldn't finish it. But everything he wanted, he got. And
home. I'll eat it later.
Yeah, right? Eat your candy, young man.
Listen, he ate an entire 1.5-pound pretzel at like 10 years old and had candy and had an icy. And he's this tiny little thing. And I'm like, man, you have your father's metabolism. How fortunate for you. But it was like, it's so different to see a movie through someone else's eyes that you really care about, especially when they're young. I feel like that is one of the best experiences, and that's how those movies lived up to the hype for me, is because I was so focused on his enjoyment and his excitement, and did it live up to his expectations, that it was like, okay, then everything was worth it. Like, then it's a good movie for me if it's a good movie for him. And like, that's how the Avengers movies were. I would have one showing that was like all about him and making sure he was happy, and then I would go see it again to like actually watch the movie and pay attention. yeah.
So, yeah, Stan, I know you weren't the biggest fan of it, but yeah, it's that's when you mentioned it earlier, I'm like, oh.
No, that was, like I said, it, you know, there are lots of things that I have gone in and have had hype and was a little just, you know, didn't meet my expectations. And that's what it all boils down to.
Right.
I think hype in general is expectations, but, you know, on a second and then subsequently multiple rewatches, I'm like, yeah, I love this movie. But Infinity War was kind of that way for me. By that time, I was a full-fledged MCU devotee and was like super excited about Infinity War. And man, it certainly lived up to it for me. So
yeah, I mean, because for me, Endgame was like that. Like, I enjoyed it. Now, to be fair, the first time I watched it, it was in this 4DX theater, which this is not just the moving seat or vibrating seat. This has got lightning. It's got mist. It's got snow. It's got wind. The seats, actually, they only come in groups of four, and they slide, they shift, they tilt up, they tilt down.
God, I mean, that's so cool.
It's so like if Thor's flying, for instance, right? So let's say he's flying. There's strobe lights that simulate the lightning in the lightning scenes. The seats tilt up, so you're leaning forward. So it's like you're flying in the seat in front of you is blowing wind in your face to simulate the wind that's going by as you're flying.
Sounds like a roller coaster ride.
It's a 2.5 hour roller coaster is what it is. So it was good, but it also 2.5 hours of that kind of maybe takes you out of being exactly in the moment as well. And it got better with subsequent watches. And I mean that, of course, when you hear on your left, you know, and I mean that, scene where everybody shows up to back up Captain America. I mean, I'm getting chills just thinking about that scene because it's such an amazing scene.
Yeah,
it is just such a great movie. And but again, the first time I was like, man, this is great, and I enjoyed it. But yeah, it was a little. I was like, it was good, but it was a fun ride, literally and figuratively.
I actually had Endgame on my list before I decided to replace it with my last pick, which is Game of Thrones.
Oh, and that was a last minute cut for me, just so you know.
I waited to talk about it till the very end because I didn't want to take it away from you if that was on your list. But it truly goes, it just, how this works out is perfect because Brian is here and Brian is the reason that I had seen, and just like many people had seen, the Game of Thrones show. Like I wouldn't have seen it had you not talked it up to so many people, and then they talked it up, and then it was like everybody was doing Game of Thrones parties because it was right. So magnificent, and I was on board, and I was like, man, I have to put subtitles on to understand half the crap they're saying because I just cannot, I can't comprehend it.
And we talked about that a few weeks ago where, they're introducing new terms and new places and people and all these names, and they're slightly different and they're talking with an accent. I don't know what you're saying.
Right. It turned out to be such an amazing experience to watch that show grow, to watch. I mean, whether you liked the last season or not, I'm somebody who liked the last season. I thought that, you know, it could have been better for sure. I think there were opportunities to make it better and to have more episodes would have changed that dramatically. But in terms of the story, I was satisfied. Mm-hmm. And every season it was like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen in episode 9? What's going to, you know, who's going to die because nobody was safe? And that moment in the first season where his head gets cut off, you're just like, okay, I'm sold. I'm in. Like you're sold at that moment, but then like you have all this hype and expectation every season because something crazy happens, and then you're hyped for the next season, then you're excited because then something else that's crazy happens. It's just so unexpected and unbelievable, and it was like truly enchanting as a world to be part of that. To be part of that series and to be so compelled by everything that was happening and all of the cast members. And truly, they had an all around incredible production and cast the entire way through. Never faltered in those capacities. Like it just was, it was great.
Yeah. The attention to detail in that is just astronomical. And that's one of the things I love about it is, you know, leading up to season two, you rewatch season one, and then you go through season two, and then you, before season three starts, you rewatch both of those. And as you start adding on these seasons, you start picking up the details in season one, going, there's this character that was in maybe 30 seconds, and now he's showing up 3 years later, and he's a major character. You know, granted, they probably recast him or something, but yeah, it's just the, and then when you start looking at how everything starts to unwind and the paths that everybody has gone down, and because who's responsible for this and who's responsible for that, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And yeah, I agree with you. That's a very, very good call.
That was it was one of those pleasant surprises for me because, you know, I was a fan of HBO. They had done The Sopranos and The Wire, mm-hmm. and, you know, had some really good solid track record drama. Sure. Yeah. And when I saw that they were doing a genre of fantasy, I was like, oh, I'm on board with that. So I was in early. I started watching it from, I think, the first episode, and I was like, oh, this is good. But, you know, you think about it now and with the splintering of all the streaming services, you know, are we going to have, when is the next time we're going to have a show that, you know, it was a cultural touchstone.
Absolutely.
Know? And now it's, you know, you guys have talked about it many times. Are there too many options? Are there too many, you know, too much content? And, you know, I love Stranger Things. You guys love Stranger Things, but does everybody love Stranger Things? Are there shows that everyone is going to watch again? And it may be a while before we have another Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those benchmark shows, and if you had to give me one show to have the, you know, the complete season just to take on a deserted island, it would probably be Game of Thrones. Just because
it gets better with every rewatch.
It absolutely does. You can still watch and pick up details that you missed the previous times you've watched them. To this day, you can still do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I have a friend that has been rewatching or has just started watching the series, you know, a few weeks or months ago. Maybe he started like mid to late COVID 2020, and he was telling me about it, and he could just see how excited he was as he's going through it, and I was like, to be where you are,
right? I was like, oh, I wish I still had that.
That just the unknown of that series and the anticipation of what was going to happen next. But I also appreciated how it was it was so rare that it was something that was predictable that you could see happening. And from what I understand, the book readers were still happy and impressed by the adaptation, which, again, like we've mentioned, is so incredibly hard to do. You have to really be authentic and dedicated to get that much of it through in terms of context and just the world building to make sure that it's perfect. And even after they decided to continue it on their own as HBO, they still maintained that authenticity and they still made it beautiful and amazing. And it was also a product of its time in terms of the conversations that were happening. People still had water cooler conversations. Like, that brought it back to life. I think it brought so many people together, because even like the group that would put things, they would do like a weekly showing of it. We'd go to their house and we'd go watch it, and they'd have like a pot, like basically you'd bring food and it would rotate, which is always enticing, right? And it was just to watch that with other people and to see their reactions, and everybody is like gasping and what? Oh my God. Holy shit. At the same time, everybody had that realization that there's some bonkers stuff happening here, and everybody was so on board with it, and it shocked everybody. Like, that just doesn't happen. That's the feeling of being in a movie theater while being at home. That just does not happen.
So how long after it had begun that you started watching it?
That's a good question. It was probably a season or two into it before I even started. Like, I waited a little while because I was just like, I tried it, I think, initially, and I was like, okay, well, this is kind of hard to like capture for me in terms of.
Yeah, first viewing, it's hard to, I mean, you're to keep straight, like, who everybody is. It introduces so many people, just throws them at you, and you're like, I don't know who's who and what's what, and the correlation, and these people are coming from here. And then it takes you about a half a season to realize the opening credits is actually laying out where everybody's at.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah. Oh, that's what that is? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's another really good point in terms of how they set it up and show you everything. But I also got to a point where I was like, screw it. I'm just going to nickname the characters how I see them, like how a waitress might, like, this is the blonde table over here, blonde two girls or whatever. Like, that's what I did. I categorized them with a name that I titled them. And I was like, that's just that person. Jason Momoa was like the hot, awful guy. And so you can just go along with it. And then finally you're like, oh, okay, I know who that person is. I know their name. I know where they're from. And you can catch into it. It's just, it takes a lot, but it was, even then, it was so worth the effort that you had to put into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's, yeah. And that's what we're missing these days, are those water cooler conversations with these, you know, and that's the downside to streaming and binging all these 10, 13, 20 episode seasons that are dropping. It's like, oh yeah, I watched it this weekend. Oh, what'd you think? You know, and you talk about the whole season. Whereas Monday morning, you come in and go, holy shit, did you see it last? No, yes. Don't tell me.
Yeah.
I got it recorded. Don't tell me, you know? And yeah, and it's, and again, you're talking with people that picked up on certain things that you didn't, and such a great, just cultural binding type of show that is just, it's going to be a while before we say that again.
Yeah, I agree. Are there any honorable mentions that you guys wanted to, because I'm all for honorable mentions, so I'm not going to tell you you have a three limit.
You're running the show.
So you guys can throw it in there if you want to.
We're gonna have 60 honorable mentions. I actually have a 100 of them. The next biggest one was probably the original Batman. That was a hugely hyped movie that I stood in line to see when I was, you know, probably 10 or 11 years old, if that. That was a really big one. Blair Witch Project lived up to it for me. Lost. That was one that I came to not in the beginning and was blown away by. Those are some of my big ones.
Wow. Yep. You stole Batman from me. because, yeah, again, being a comic book guy, I mean, that was like really the first major well done. I mean, before it, I was buying like the movie version of baseball cards. I had read the book. I had entered some sort of giveaway for the Batmobile. Like, I remember being on vacation when it released, and I made my cousin go with me, and just, yeah, it was just such a big thing to, and it, for me personally, it lived up to the hype as well.
Oh, it was so good. That was one where I drove up to the, or I was dropped off at the movie theater. My mom wasn't going to stand in the line with me, but she and my sister wanted to see it with me. So I got dropped off. I was like second in line. Somebody beat me to it, but they had, you know, I came up from a fairly smallish town in Alabama, and on the side of the theater, someone had painted the Bat logo, you know, from that.
Oh, wow.
That. And I was just like, so happy. Like, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened in this town. And it may well have been, but that was like a barrage of advertisements, and it was everywhere. They're talking about it on the news. You know, it was a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Amanda?
So one that I have to mention, but it doesn't totally qualify for me, which is why it wasn't on my initial list, is Boondock Saints. Now, that one was hyped up. It was hyped up very, like, late to the game. And for me, I didn't hear about it until probably 2008, I think, or something. And
so it was hyped up by word of mouth type stuff, not...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was like, okay, so I finally watched this, and I instantly fell in love with the movie. I was like, this is so up my alley, this humor. It's so dark. It's violent. But it's also got a family component, and they also kind of care about people, but they're murderers, but it's fine. Like, there was just so much about it, and I was consumed by it, and I watched it. After I initially saw it, I probably watched it once a week for many months. And then it had its anniversary. And so I went to go see the anniversary in theaters. And it was just, there were so many bonding moments that I found through that moment, through that movie with other people. And I had no idea so many people liked it until later on. But it was hyped up in a smaller capacity. So that's why I'm like, it doesn't fully, you know, it doesn't compare to the hype of like Game of Thrones or something.
Sure.
But for me, that it's my favorite movie. So it exceeded every hype and expectation possible.
I sometimes find that those are the even better ones, where you just get a handful of people talking about something small, but
yeah,
you know, it really does build up, and then you get a really special gem like Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
Brian, yeah. What you said that Batman was one of your honorable mentions. Do you have any more?
Not really. None that are really springing to mind there. I figured once I hit those three, those were probably pretty safe bets there. No, because most of mine that I remember, like from word of mouth, have been more disappointments than pleasures. It's you hear something like, "Oh, it's so great," and part of that's my fault for waiting so long to see it. That you hear, whether it's Oscar hype, whether it's just media blitz, whether it's then the eventual just. It's almost like people aren't even really thinking about the movie. They're just thinking like, well, I heard it's so good for so long that I'm just going to say it's good. So you hear them talking about it. Like they can't use their brains. But so, yeah, then you eventually see it. And maybe it's, you know, the expectations are just so high that you're like, it was good, but wasn't all that. I don't know why it's getting so much praise. But
Manny, you can't just have one honorable mention when you have carte blanche to... to make a list like this.
Golly, let's see. Inglourious Basterds was one that I did have a pretty strong anticipation for that lived up to it. That was one that I know the person I saw it with didn't care for it, but I did, and it was just like, you know, when you know Tarantino's coming out with one, I mean, mm-hmm. you're already up at like a level four just out of the gate, right? Just out of the gate. It's just, he's attached to it. He made it. Okay. Like maybe even a five. You're ready. And then, you know, then the subject matter comes in. You get a better idea of what the movie's about. See some trailers. Okay. Holy shit. I'm involved. Now I'm ready. And, Inglourious Basterds was one that had some pretty high anticipation for it that lived up to it.
Well, I'm going to read a few listener comments. So Andreas Grillheisel says, Titanic, I did not plan to watch it at the time it opened, but constant praise around me made me go see this cheesy love story on a sinking ship. Still one of the most memorable experiences at the movies for me. Also, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Mad Max Fury Road, and Gravity were so much better than I hoped for. Angela Wallach says, Schitt's Creek, I was late to it, and... me, Amanda Sink, Jessica Farrell, and Amy Peterson talked it up so much. I watched the first episode and was like, I don't know. Thankfully, I kept watching and got my husband to watch with me. One of the best times I've ever had watching a show. Absolutely worth the hype. And then Josh Stima says, I would say both Batman Begins and The Dark Knight as far as films go. There was so much riding on those to revitalize and save that character in the world of cinema. As far as television, I would have to say Game of Thrones as a whole. Didn't start watching it until it was in season 4, but I binged it just so my best friend would stop talking about it. It was brilliant, in parentheses, mostly. Those are some good picks. Titanic is a really good pick because I kind of forgot about that one.
Yeah.
That was another that, I don't know if it lived up to the hype for me. And then I became a hater because it was so popular. And then I watched it again. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a really good movie.
I mean, if you were young, you rewound that VHS tape to see a glimpse of the drawing. I know I did. Let's talk about our upcoming releases and our recommendations. Stan, what do we have coming out on May 21st?
I believe this is a video on demand. It's called Riders of Justice. Marcus, who has gone home to his teenage daughter, Matilda, when his wife dies in a tragic train accident. It seems like an accident until a mathematics geek, who is also a fellow passenger on the train, and his two colleagues show up. This is directed by Anders Thomas Jensen, starring Mads Mikkelsen, Nicolas Lekas, and Andrea Heike-Gaisberg.
Cool.
Then we have Drunk Bus.
Yeah, Ryan. we got Drunk Bus here. This has got the guy you recognize from Ozark, Charlie Tahan or Tahan, something like that. He plays a guy named Michael and is a recent graduate whose post-college plan is derailed when his girlfriend leaves him for a job in New York City. He's stuck in Ohio without a new plan of his own, and Michael finds himself caught in the endless loop of driving the Drunk Bus. The debaucherous late-night campus shuttle that ferries drunk college students from parties to the dorms and back. When the bus service hires a security guard to watch over the night shift, Michael comes face-to-tattooed face, with Pineapple. And that is his actual name, Pineapple Tangaroa. So Yeah, he's a 300-pound punk rock Samoan who challenges him with a kick in the ass to break the loop and start living or risk driving in circles forever.
Oh, yeah. My. That sounds interesting.
Speaking of going in circles, huh?
Yeah. We also have Pink All I Know So Far coming to Amazon Prime on May 21st. A behind-the-scenes look at Pink as she balances family and life on the road, leading up to her first Wembley Stadium performance on 2019's Beautiful Trauma World Tour. So nice. Any other recent film or TV recommendations that we haven't talked about? Stan, you've got a streaming recommendation we'll talk about in a second, but any others?
I started watching the second season of Love, Death, and Robots, and I'm with you. It's a good time. If you like, you know, especially if you like animation, it's very creative.
I think it's episode 4, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's like snow in the desert or something like that. Anyway, it the animation literally looks like they're real people. Like it's wow. It took a minute to decipher if this was real or animated. And then there were moments where you're like, okay, I think that I'm pretty sure that's animation. It was just so incredibly well done. I just am continuously impressed by these short episodes that tell a story in like 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first season. I haven't got around to watching that second one yet, but it's definitely on my saved watch list or whatever to get around to it. I did finish Shadow and Bone.
Oh yeah, did you like it?
I did, and you definitely need subtitles on that.
Yes, you do.
Definitely, it's mandatory. It's There's so many, again, kind of like Game of Thrones. It's just there's so many new things and people and places, and yeah. You just can't keep up with your own ears. You can't trust your ears at all.
Yeah.
So, and I've been watching Golden Girls. I've been, holy cow.
Heck yeah.
I love me some Golden Girls. And
who's your favorite Golden Girl?
I mean, God, I honestly, Betty White is the easy choice, and she may be, but Bea Arthur is freaking just hilarious, and I didn't realize how similar we are. Snarky as hell.
Sicily, 1932.
So yeah, it's golly, it's, you know, 30 something years old, and it's still good. It's still great to watch. And of course, you don't have to pay attention to it. You turn it on while you're getting ready, yeah, or something. You watch one or two episodes at a time, and you know, and you're done for the day or whatever. So it's I'm not binging it, but yeah, I'm working through it. And it's a good palate cleanser as well when you've watched something kind of heavy, which a lot of the stuff that, you know, a lot of my stuff is, you know, murders and dark mystical stuff or whatever. And yeah, so it's kind of like, again, it's a palate cleanser, you know. It kind of goes, all right, kind of brings you.
You need to have one of those in your back pocket.
Absolutely. Yeah. Totally.
My palate cleanser lately has been Criminal Minds. I don't really know that cleanses a palate, though. It's
no.
It makes things worse. That was for most of my life, that was my dream job, though, to be an FBI profiler. Like, I'm so, and when I watch the episodes, it's supposed to be one of those, like, just put it on in the background sort of things, but I'm like, what's... I can tell you about this profile.
I don't know how they solved anything working in all those dark rooms all the time. Because, you know, every freaking cop show, NCIS, whatever, they're all like, you know, dark. You know, they got one light that's shining.
Yeah, that's true.
And everything else is kind of lit with these little thin lights in the wall or screens or something. But if you were going to like a real one, it's lit up with about a billion fluorescent lamps and, you know, you don't miss a thing. But yeah.
And then also The Nevers on HBO Max. That show is really good. I finally started catching up on it. It's having its season finale this upcoming Sunday, whatever date that is. I don't know, like the 22nd or something, 23rd. And it's just such an interesting show. It's essentially about these, they're called Touched. And they essentially have like their own powers, if you will. But it's in a very period piece, like England setting, and most of the people around them don't like them. They think that they're weird and they're too different. And so there's like a very dark element to the show. And I don't want to say anything in case anybody watches it. It's just, it's worth it.
I've got it saved as well.
There's only like 6 or 7 episodes in this season. So just watch it. It is great.
Yeah, I think that's my plan is when we're done, go watch episode 2. So you're saying it's worth continuing along.
Oh, yes. It's so good. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, the first episode was really cool. It had that steampunk vibe.
Mm-hmm.
The subtitles on that one helped a little bit as well.
Yeah. So. Stan, what's your weekly streaming recommendation?
So I'm going to give a little love to one of the lesser known streaming services, Shudder. I think I may have alluded to it the last time I was on. But it's the horror, streaming service that I think is owned by AMC. And, you look into it and there are so many of these tiny little streaming services and, sort of like my knee jerk, I want to subscribe to them all, but you can only subscribe to so many.
That $10 adds up after about.
Yeah, it really does. This one, I think is $4.99, maybe $5.99, but it's just horror. At first, it was all just some old stuff, but they just like all the streaming services, they started developing their own content and acquiring things that they're distributing exclusively. And the movie that I saw most recently was called The Power. And it's a British film, and I think it's directed by and written by Karina Faith. And it's set in the 1974, early 70s, when there was a strike by the coal workers, and they were doing these rolling blackouts in all of London. Just like, all right, well, this is tonight's neighborhood that's going to have no power. And that's how they conserve their energy during these coal miner strikes. And the story is about this young nurse and her first night in this hospital. She's put on night shift duty as the power is being turned off in this old creepy hospital. So, it's a totally worth a watch. It has great atmosphere, a few like legitimately good scares. And, it also has, a nice message, or not necessarily nice, but a message underneath it all, but totally worth the time. And like I said, I really like Shudder, and it kind of gets better all the time for me.
Good deal. What about you, Amanda?
I have no more. I would say, Stan, since you love horror movies and you have a Shudder account, if you haven't seen Scare Me, I can't remember. Did we talk about that?
We haven't talked about it, but that was really good.
So good. So good.
And, her name is escaping me, but she's somebody to keep an eye on. She's great in everything that I've seen her in.
She's the new one from The Boys, and I can't.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. Aya Cash. Aya Cash.
Yeah.
I got a random question because, there's no rules with us three.
Aaron's not here.
Aaron's
the
not
cat's
here. He's,
away.
He's going, guys, I want to go to bed at some point, But with all these streaming services that we have these days, do you strictly just kind of bounce from one show on one streaming service to another? Or do you find yourself maybe binging more like Hulu for maybe weeks or a month or something? Then you jumped in kind of more... The average, I guess, kind of weighs more towards one streaming service than the others. Because, like, I hardly ever watch Amazon Prime anymore. But when I do, I will do it for, a good chunk of time. And then kind of like Hulu's my thing now. And I'm kind of work through, I guess, whatever I want to see with Hulu. And then I kind of work my way back to Netflix or something. And that's kind of how I do. I'm just curious as to if you guys do anything similar or you just go, I like that show. And then I'll watch this one here and just bounce around.
I tend to bounce around, but I think probably unintentionally I'm doing what you're doing because I do notice there are times where I'm like, well, I've watched 3 shows on Hulu in a row, or I'm kind of on an HBO Max kick right now.
Right.
But there's no rhyme or reason to it.
Yeah,
it's just
right,
sort of like,
right.
I, maybe I'm watching one and as I'm about to play the next episode, I happen to see something in my list or recommended for me.
Or the recommended,
and, yeah. Yeah. But it's, I don't know. I've lost count of how many services I have. It's usually just the big four and Shudder. But if you guys don't know about Canopy, it's one that everybody should know about. It's actually free if you have a library card. And they've got a lot of like really good stuff. They have some things that have been released in the past few years, a lot of old kind of Criterion stuff and some good documentaries. So everybody should check that out because you get like 5 free movies a month. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll look into it. Good tip.
I would say that I use Hulu almost exclusively for the TV shows that are premiering on cable networks that I'm not going to pay cable prices for. So I like The Resident, Grey's Anatomy, some medical drama shows. Handmaid's Tale is exclusive to Hulu, so I have to watch it there. I think that might be, A Million Little Things. Those are the shows that I watch. I think they're all ABC except for one. And so that's what I use Hulu for. I try to explore it sometimes and I'm like, there's not anything here that really interests me. So I just use it for those shows. I tend to lean towards Netflix a lot, but I'm noticing now with HBO Max's uploads and kind of their recommendations that they put up there that I'm like, there's a lot more stuff on here that I want to watch. And it's convenient. Like I wanted to start catching up on some of the Saw movies for Spiral. And so I just went to HBO Max and it happened to be there. And I was like, sweet. So they have all the Saw movies. So I'll just watch them here, even though I own the collection. Yeah.
Who has time to put in a Blu-ray?
Yeah, right?
Oh, God. That's so 5 years ago.
Exactly. All right. Well, you can share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group on Twitter at BuyPopcorn or on our site at TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Be sure to rate us and subscribe on your preferred podcast app because then you'll get alerts the minute a new episode is dropped. You can find Brian on the first 150-ish episodes of The Hollywood Outsider, Stan at the emergency department, and me on Veronica's Marshmallows Smirk and at Sink Into This on Twitter. Before we get out of here, we have one thing left. I want to play a game. Movie innuendo, and we're going to use Saw or a similarly themed horror movie. Essentially, what happens here is that we're going to take two innocent lines, as innocent as they can be from this franchise, from Saw, or I guess you could go outside the franchise if you really want to be a rebel, but you're going to deliver them as a sexual innuendo, and then we're going to vote on who has done so most effectively. So, Brian, why don't you kick us off?
All right. I'm sticking with Saw. It was just easier to do, basically. So, all right, here we go. Shh. Hang on a second. I think I found something.
That's a good one.
That was from Lawrence. Lawrence said that.
My first one is from Saw 2, and it sounds terrible, so I promise this is not what you should do in a sexual situation, but it works. Don't worry, you're sound asleep and can't feel a thing. Super messed up, but it works.
Golly, I've got so many jokes for that, but so many people will take them.
Just say them. I'm okay with it. There's no rules.
Oh, this is so uncomfortable. This game always.
That's what she said. Always.
Ouch! Ouch! You know, I have a friend that I am constantly. You know, his only method of humor is to go sexual all the time, and I'm.
That
I'm
sounds like a good friend to have.
You would think so until you know you spend a weekend with him, and then
it gets old.
I hate to say it, but yes, it does. So, all right. So I've got one from Saw. Most people are so ungrateful to be alive, but not you. Not anymore.
So it sounds like that's a pleasant experience. All right, Brian, good. It's back to you.
All right. Yes, I am sick, officer.
Doing a little role playing.
Meow. Jigsaw said that. So,
my second one is from the first original Saw, and it's from Adam. I'm having a blast. This is the most fun I've had without lubricant.
Well, I don't know if that's quite an innocent.
There's not a lot of innuendo there.
Yeah, there's not much innuendo there. It's pretty much... I mean, sure, the tone and, everything is a little bit different.
Look, it counts.
All right, all right.
It's my rules, right?
There, that's right. Hey, look, exactly. There's no judges here, so nice.
Okay, don't look at me. I can't help you.
I might have said that once or twice before too.
Oh, oh my!
that just gets gross. That just gets gross.
I have to say my favorite is the first one Brian delivered. That one had me laughing.
Oh, all right.
Stan, is there a favorite of yours?
I think your no. You know what? I almost picked the one without the lubricant. So I'm picking that one that you had.
Oh, thank you. So it does count. See, Brian?
Oh,
I love that game. You guys have been awesome. Thank you both for showing up and stepping up for the Hollywood Outsider. And remember, the next time you head to a theater to see all of the 2020 movies that were postponed until now, buy popcorn. Are you guys ready to do this?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
God, I haven't sat in this seat in forever. It feels weird. I have to like actually pay attention and podcast. Okay. Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning... I can't even talk.
We're off to a good start.
I was about to start doing Veronica's Marshmallows stuff, and I was like...